Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and here we are at the 16th day of October 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go if you want to jump into the real-time multimedia extravaganza, madcap adventure that it is, The Horn chat room, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, has being a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen thus far not to fold space this evening to become Man Cave. Also in the room at the moment, good evening, Jug of Punch. And we are off and running with a ring of the memorial cowbell. Yes, indeed, we is on. This thing on. Hello? Hello? Yep. Let us begin with the usual gentle reminder that this is not an advertiser-supported radio network. This is, in fact, a radio network that runs on your goodwill, your kindness, and your determination to have independent, progressive broadcasting and a community that goes with it. And that's how it's been for almost 10 years now. Actually, this year, our 10th anniversary will fall a week from tomorrow. Now, what it is right now, and let's see, about 10 years ago this time, I was freaking out, and Ben Birch was his calm, collected self, and we were making all of this work, and Agnes had learned how to produce, and yeah. But anyway, that's where we were 10 years ago. But anyway, no, what it is? Okay, so this is a big weekend here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicol, Virginia, Stan. Oh yes, it is. It is Bridge Day weekend, and Bridge Day is something that should be seen and experienced by everybody. Well, I mean, there's only room for about 100,000 people out on the bridge itself, so we'll have to do it in stages, but everybody should experience this at one point or another. This evening in particular, right now, about 2.5-3 miles from where I am, they're having the Taste of Bridge Day, and that's a benefit event that's held by the Rotary Clubs, and its purpose is to, you know, raise it's philanthropy. But all the really hip, cool, neat, nifty little restaurants around the area come to Smokies on the Gorge, which is part of the whole Class 6 River Runners complex. It's called Adventures on the Gorge now. It's an amalgamation. They kind of consolidated. It's like a whitewater rafting monopoly. It is a New River Bridge. It's just called Bridge Day, Jug of Punch. It's the only time of the year when you can legally walk out onto the New River Gorge Bridge, the longest single arch bridge in the Western Hemisphere. It used to be the longest steel arch bridge on the planet, single arch, but it was superseded by some enterprising, in Japan. But a steel arch bridge, a single arch bridge, is a bridge that is, curiously enough, comprised of a single arch. This is a great, humongous, gigantic arch that extends from one mountaintop to the other, and it really is an engineering marvel. It's designed to sway up to 7 feet side to side in hurricane-force winds. And you know what? Hey, with that climate change that doesn't exist, we may experience hurricane-force winds one of these days here in the hills and hollers of almost level west, by God, Virginia. I mean, we already did once. I mean, yeah, the winds that came with the derecho 3 years ago were close to Cat 1 or around Cat 1, 85, 90-mile-an-hour winds. It starts at 9 a.m. tomorrow and extends to 3 p.m. It is the single largest, it's the largest single-day festival in West Virginia. It really is. It's huge. And there's food vendors and all kinds of good carnival food, you know, your elephant ears and your Pennsylvania Dutch funnel cakes that are not produced by anyone who is either from Pennsylvania or Dutch or even Deutsch, which is mispronounced, how you get Pennsylvania Dutch, it's mispronunciation. But you know, fried in toxic fatty oils and you know, the corn dogs and fried vegetables and yum. And then tomorrow, after the Bridge Day festivities, the Fayetteville chili cook-off will be taking place, and I can't wait for that. That's going to be good. I'm hoping that my buddy Oscar Aguiar will be making his white bean chicken chili, which is, oh my God, good. But there'll be others as well, and lots of tasting to be done, and yum. Probably pop in over by our good friends at the Secret Sandwich Society, where there are always a whole lot of really good craft beers on tap. They've recently opened up a space above the restaurant itself. They're calling it The Grove, and it's a meeting space, and they have music in there, and you can rent it for, like, wedding receptions and stuff like that. It's really cool. They're doing an excellent job there, and it's just just to see the way that it all comes together is quite amazing. I mean, a little by way of testimony, Brother Deacon Asa and Ron from the Non-Frozen North can both tell you what a fun time it is, as can anyone who's ever been there. So right now it's Taste of Bridge Day is going on. And long about 11 o'clock tonight, they will shut down traffic on U.S. Highway 19, otherwise known as Appalachian Corridor L, across the bridge. And there will be a gigantic traffic mess tomorrow as people who ordinarily would go about, 6 miles and get across the bridge and be in Fayetteville will instead have to do what they used to do many, many years ago before the bridge came in, and that is to get off on U.S. 60, wind down Gauley Mountain, and come back up the other side at an area called Cotton Hill, where a bridge down in the gorge crosses the New River, New River being, of course, ironically, you know, I just happen to live where the goddess of irony goes camping, the New River Gorge being the second oldest river on Earth, and hence the New River. Well, hell, it's new to the Nile. New River's older than the Amazon, older than the Volga, older than the Congo, older than the Rhine, older than the Mississippi, older than the Ohio, older than the Yangtze, older than everything but the Nile. This is based on the geologic formations and the geological estimates of, yeah, right. And so the bridge itself is about 876 feet above the New River. It's 3 feet short of the height of the Eiffel Tower. And tomorrow, people with no real affection for solid ground will jump off of said bridge. A lot of people are under the misapprehension that they are bungee jumping. No. That would involve good sense. being hooked to something after you jump. No. They are jumping. They're base jumping. Base stands for something. Bridge, aerials. They're base jumping. In other words, they've got parachutes and they jump off and they release their parachutes and they float 876 feet to the floor with any luck at all. I'd say, oh golly, probably in the history of Bridge Day, which has been going on for quite some time now, more than 10 people have had their chute not open. And of course, the landing area down below the bridge, that would be the New River. And there's a little sandy, beachy area where if you're really good, you'll land there. If you're not, you'll land in the river or in the trees. That's how that works. People say, I do, and get married and jump off the bridge. They group jump. And the advent of GoPro cameras has made it a lot of fun. Stuff will be uploading to YouTube, bang, 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 tomorrow, because give them credit for doing well what they do. AT&T's 4G LTE service is pretty respectable around here, and U.S. Cellular's 4G LTE is really good. So people will be able to upload their videos almost immediately. And the press of people out on the bridge can get kind of frightening. It's amazing that that bridge can hold that many people, but I mean, it gets real, you know, wall to wall and side to side and kind of, concert-y, if you know what I mean. Ah, thank you. Thank you, Sparky. Sparky in the chat room telling me BASE stands for Building, Antenna, Span, and Earth. That would be your BASE in BASE jumping. I think the New River Gorge Bridge qualifies as span. Tomorrow, just in case you're wondering, the local supporters of Bernie Sanders will be doing their part. Ferg will be involved. They'll be having a voter information booth with lots of Bernie stuff and encouraging people to take a look at Bernie Sanders. It's a great way to reach out to people. And by the way, yes, as Jim points out, from the bridge, you can really get a good view of those Titanic plates. So it's gonna be a big and exciting weekend. I'm looking forward to it. I got my good hiking boots out, and a nice cushiony pair of socks. Because it will be, all told, it's a little more than a mile across the bridge itself. And then from where we'll probably park to the bridge is 2. And it's another mile from the end of the bridge into Fayetteville, so that's 2. Let's see, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So tomorrow's looking like about an eight-mile hike. Mm-hmm. Should be a blast. But anyway, enough of that. It is Friday on the front porch, and I did want to get something. I wanted to announce something early on. Chris in Germany has kindly provided us a Have a Show on Me challenge this evening. She has offered to contribute an evening's programming worth of fundraising if that will be matched by, the same amount of money. In other words, she'll double the money. The money's got to come in, then Chris will double it. So hopefully that'll happen, because that'll put us to the good for the entire week, including, thank you very kindly, Chris, including the abortive attempt to broadcast from Beckley on Tuesday night when we got the wrong bag of gear, but then it turned out the bandwidth wasn't worth a damn either. So, see? Yeah. Oh, hey, cool. Rolling in response to Chris's challenge, Carol offers up the Friday on the Front Porch Odd change, bust Bob's brain by making him cipher, challenge. And so that means we have $29.63 of the $200 we need to raise, which leaves us at, oh my God, let's see, that would take it 180. No, but not 170. Okay, so $170.37 remains. Carol asking, how many other Horn Denistas can pony up at an odd change offering? $170.37 to go. Thank you, Carol. And, you know, I think this, they say a great way to forestall dementia and Alzheimer's and stuff like that is doing crossword puzzles and Sudoku and that. Well, y'all do that for me because I get to cipher while I try to produce a radio program. And that's really cool. Maybe that bodes well for the future. And for my, you know, my golden oatmeal gumming years, right? So, yeah, $170.37 to go to match Chris's Have a Show on Me challenge as part of Carol's Bust Bob's Brain by Making Him Cipher challenge. Oh, God. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. Golden oatmeal it is. Beats the hell out of Golden Grahams, I can tell you that. So it is. It's Friday on the front porch. It's 16 minutes past the hour. Just a little note going forward. Here in about 44 minutes or so. See, I can do that cipher. I can clock cipher real good. No, it's not golden oatmeal years. It's the oatmeal one gums in one's golden years. By God, don't overthink it. It's a joke. So it's Friday on the front porch, and here in about 43 minutes. See, I did it again. Here in about 43 minutes, we will be cranking up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, as we do on every Friday on the front porch, and hopefully having some scintillating conversation. I know we are due a concert report from Billable Rick, who was playing hooky last week. If I recall correctly, in the last couple of weeks, Billable Rick has seen both Van Halen and the Scorpions. I bet the Scorpions are still rocking pretty good. Yeah, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. And anybody else who wants to join in the conversation, and we got plenty to conversate about. People are still talking. I mean, God Almighty, the debate, the entertainment on CNN was on Tuesday evening, and people are still talking about it because it, even though it didn't have the fireworks of a GOP pageant, what with all of its, you suck, no, you suck, no, you suck more, oh, you suck the most, you suck infinity plus one, the Democrats didn't do that, but there was enough there to make it interesting. Yeah. And one of the things that has that maybe we'll talk about was tucked quietly away inside the early going in the CNN Democratic Entertainment and it emanated from the gob of one Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper. I don't know if Vanderbilt's his middle name, but he's a Vanderbilt. Okay, I mean, that's like kind of being a Rockefeller. I mean, it's sort of inescapable. I neglected to mention, if you do want to contribute to the program, you can always go to the contribute page at headonradionetwork.com. And there, you fill in the basic information. You leave out the pushy stuff about who you work for and how much you make and all of that crap. We don't want to know. And you get to the second screen, and on the second screen, you'll see PayPal, and then you'll see credit cards. And if you want to participate by credit cards, you click that. If you want to go to PayPal, you click that. That's how it works. It's the most efficient way of doing contributions that we have found, and pretty well foolproof. If you want to use the U.S. Postal Service, checks and money orders, not so much cash, because it tends to get stolen somewhere between wherever you are and here. We've had that happen. I've heard that the Cincinnati processing facility of the U.S. Postal Service has the most loss and theft of any postal service processing facility in the United States. That was told to me by somebody who works for the post office, so they'd know. But anyway, checks, money orders made payable to the Horn, not to Bob Kincaid. I never see him. That's Bossman Wayne's province. He goes to the echo chamber and puts on his spider-proof gloves and reaches in and pulls out the pulls out the envelopes as we receive them. The address for that is the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. Okie doke, okie doke. So we got that out of the way. It perked up my pink little ears when I heard it, and I realized it was one of those moments where you sort of realize that you know what the nature of the game's going to be. When I heard Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, it wasn't even a question. It was just an assertion that was presented as fact when it wasn't factual at all. Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper accused without accusing. Senator Sanders of, the direct quote was, "You honeymooned in the Soviet Union." And of course, for people who aren't inclined to find out anything more than what Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper and his nerd glasses say, but really? Because I guess that's still a thing in the United States, especially among the really, really, really old generation who vote faithfully, and many of whom may be Democrats, who still remember the Cold War.
Hey, what's that? Marveline, did he say that commie Bernie Sanders had his honeymoon in the Soviet Union? I wonder if he stayed in the guest house of that John Lennon or that Groucho Marx over there.
Take your pill, Emery.
Mm-hmm. It was, in a word, red baiting. It was, in another word, a smear. And the most tawdry kind of smear, because it really wasn't in a space where it could be deconstructed. But if you want to get a handle on how corrupt and how in the tank the for-profit media are, this is one of those moments. Because you see, one, you know where this story started? And in the article, I posted it on my Facebook page, the article is over at inthesetimes.org. This whole thing got started by none other than that website full of non-journalists that rhymes with light and fart. The fart lighters. The people who light fart. Fart lighting is kind of sophomoric, and it seems to fit in regard to that website. One would think, and historically, the end of the red baiting anti-communist witch hunts was said to come with the phrase, "At long last, sir, have you no..." What was it? Honor? But apparently it didn't. It was put to a lawyer decency. It was put to a lawyer by the name of Joseph Welch. No. He asked the question. It all runs together after a while. It was the 30th day of the Army-McCarthy hearings. It was June the 9th, 1954. The witch hunts would continue. But this kind of let the world know exactly what kind of filth was going on. It was a question in which Senator Joe McCarthy had tried to smear a junior attorney at the law firm at which Welch worked. And the smear in that case was not honeymooning in the Soviet Union, but rather being a member of the National Lawyers Guild, which was a response to the American Bar Association back when the American Bar Association didn't want to admit any of, you know, those people who had law degrees. We don't know how they got them, but they got them, and we're not going to let them join the American Bar Association, damn it. And McCarthy tried to drill away and drill away at Joseph Welch. And Joseph Welch, in a moment that lives in American history, because there are very few people who are willing to tell off a senator, especially a right-wing one, when they are in desperate need of being told off. Welch said, "Until this moment, Senator, I think I have never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness. Fred Fisher is a young man who went to the Harvard Law School and came into my firm and is starting what looks to be a brilliant career with us. Little did I dream you could be so reckless and so cruel as to do an injury to that lad. It is true that he is still with Hale and Dorr. It is true that he will continue to be with Hale and Dorr. It is, I regret to say, equally true that I fear he shall always bear a scar needlessly inflicted by you. If it were in my power to forgive you for your reckless cruelty, I would do so. I like to think I'm a gentleman, but your forgiveness will have to come from someone other than me." And McCarthy continued on, because he was a man without honor. And he said, "Senator, may we not drop this?" Welch did. "We know he belonged to the Lawyers Guild. Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator. You've done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?" And McCarthy continued. That's what most people don't know. McCarthy continued. And finally, Welch said, "Mr. McCarthy, I will not discuss this further with you. You have sat within 6 feet of me and could have asked me about Fred Fisher. You have seen fit to bring it out. And if there is a God in heaven, it will do neither you nor your cause any good. I will not discuss it further. I will not ask Mr. Cohn any more questions. You, Mr. Chairman, may, if you will, call the next witness. And that was mostly the end of Joe McCarthy. But Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper has no decency. Because understand, that none of that crap in that entertainment we watched on Tuesday was anything resembling off the cuff. It was all quite well scripted on CNN's end. Anderson was reading stuff, not saying stuff, if you get the distinction. It had all been typed right into the teleprompter there, including the nasty red bait smear.
You honeymooned in the Soviet Union.
And again, it's the whole damn filthy thing started with those jackassed society morons over at Light Fart. You know how when the when we catch a right winger, a white winger, a moron, a Republican, a Bircher, Death, or Ninth, or Tenth, or Bagger, Booger Eater, saying something absolutely reprehensible, and we quote and we provide that in a paragraph's worth of context, and they go, "But I'm being taken out of context." Well, this was taken out of context. This is not the Republican version of being taken out of context. Because see, here's how it goes. It was 1988. That would be 27 years ago for folks who can do ciphering on the fly like me. Mm-hmm. Senator Sanders was marrying for the second time. On one day, he had, and at the same time, the great communicator, Ronald Wilson Reagan, remember his name, the letters of his name go 666. Just saying. The Great Communicators Administration had put in place something called a Sister City Program. And in point of fact, Eisenhower had done it. It was 1956. It would take about a decade, but it would be called the Sister Cities International. The program still exists. Let's see. In 1973, Seattle became a sister city of Tashkent, the capital of Uzbekistan. Stan. Whatever. And in 1988... Burlington, Vermont, little Burlington, Vermont, hip, cool, little Burlington, Vermont, which wasn't nearly as hip or cool as it is now. Bernie Sanders was the mayor of Burlington, Vermont. That was, by the way, back around the time when Boss Man Wayne was running around Burlington, Vermont, and would occasionally run into Bernie time to time at a place I think they called the Chicken Bone. The Chicken Bone Cafe. So Boss Man Wayne has told me. But in 1988, during the reign of the great communicator, Ronnie the Ray Gun, Burlington became sister cities with a place called Yaroslavl, which is a city 160 miles north of Moscow. So on that day in 1988, Bernie Sanders married his second wife, Jane. That same day that they got married, they marched in the Memorial Day parade in Burlington, Vermont. The next day, they got on a plane and flew to Moscow because there aren't any direct flights from Burlington, Vermont to Yaroslavl, Soviet Union. They didn't go by themselves. There were 10 other people with them. And that is why Bernie's wife, Jane, has joked that she took her honeymoon to the Soviet Union along with 10 other people on her honeymoon. See, this is what we mean by context. The way that Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, son of white privilege, if ever there was one, laid it out there.
You spent your honeymoon in the Soviet Union.
Makes it sound as though around some fireplace one evening, perhaps sipping Stolichnaya communist vodka, Bernie and Jane had looked at each other and said, "And when we're married, we'll honeymoon in Moscow, and we'll walk hand in hand through Red Square by the Kremlin, and we'll toast the heroic leadership of V.I. Lenin." I mean, that was all sort of packaged and freighted within that nasty little slur that Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, son of privilege, put out there Tuesday evening. So it started at Lightfart. And it found its way into the pages of the Washington Post on August the 7th. That's when George Will, who needs to loosen up that goddamn bow tie a little bit because it's clearly cut off a boatload of oxygen to his brain, wrote of a guy named Robert Conquest, who documented the prisons and atrocities of the Stalin era. Will wrote, after Conquest had just died, "Conquest lived to see a current U.S. presidential candidate, a senator who had chosen, surely as an ideological gesture, to spend his honeymoon in the Soviet Union in 1988. Gulags still functioned, probably including some of the cold Auschwitzes in Siberia described in Conquest's Kolyma. The honeymooner did not mind that in 1988 political prisoners were, as may still be the case, being tortured in psychiatric hospitals," hear the scare quotes. "Thanks to the unblinking honesty of people like Conquest, the Soviet Union is now such a receding memory that Bernie Sanders' moral obtuseness, the obverse of Conquest's behavior, character, is considered an amusing eccentricity." Dante documented several levels of hell, and I'm pretty sure George Will's going to wind up in one for that kind of lying. The mayor of Burlington, Vermont, with his brand new wife and 10 other people, flew on a goodwill mission to a newly established sister city, Yaroslavl, immediately after getting married. In other words, putting civic business ahead of personal pleasure. Because, see, there's not one iota of information out there that says Bernie Sanders was just drumming his fingers, itching to go to the Soviet Union for a honeymoon. Oh, party! I don't even know that Bernie likes caviar. Doesn't strike me as a caviar kind of guy. And all of that, all of those facts were sacrificed so that Anderson Cooper, who draws his breath and his pay from CNN Time Warner, and CNN, for whom I once worked, and does their bidding, and Time Warner, who gave some several millions of dollars to Dr. Senator Secretary Clinton, yeah, so that he could score a cheap hit with the ignorancia out in TV land. I mean, can't you just see it now?
Jane, we're gonna go and honeymoon in the Soviet Union. I can already taste the borscht.
Yeah. I mean, it's just sleazy. It really is. Jack in Shreveport reminding us by email. And as a reminder, that's the same George Will who defected to the Fox Network from the barely tolerable Sunday news show on ABC.
Yes.
So, I mean, maybe I've exhausted the issue. Maybe I haven't. But how else? This is one of those moments when you haul out Sherlock Holmes. Once you have, what is it? Once you have eliminated the impossible, whatever is left, however improbable, is the answer. Well, let's see. Let's eliminate the impossible. Anderson could. Does somebody scrawled that into the teleprompter just minutes before the Democratic Entertainment went live, and Anderson Cooper had no idea it was there. Nope, impossible. Let's see. Anderson Cooper was possessed by demons. Impossible. A Hillary operative snuck in and... No, impossible. So what is left is that CNN and Anderson Cooper, who had editorial control over every word that he said that evening, deliberately tried to run a nasty little bit of red baiting on Senator Sanders in the hopes that America would yell, "Call me, goddammit!" and fall in line behind his employer's favored candidate for the Democratic nomination. It's really the only answer. Now, way back 10 years ago with Hurricane Katrina, I admit we had a little fun at Anderson's expense when he was frustrated by the Calliope music. Dang it, Tim's not in the room tonight. Frustrated by the Calliope music playing behind him. And that's where the word Calliope came from. Because we all know it's Calliope. I guess the proper pronunciation in ancient Greek would be Calliope. But I don't think Anderson's an ancient Greek. Although Lottie's going down the same road I just did in the chat room. Lottie says, the Calliope music on his Chinese communist-made Calliope programmed Cooper's brain to say it Manchurian candidate style. Nope, that's impossible, too. Now, we had some fun with Anderson over the Calliope thing. But henceforward, I think I understand Anderson Cooper for who and what he is. He is a creature. He is an owned thing. He may, by God, be a Vanderbilt, but he is a Vanderbilt that is owned by Time Warner Corporation. And he will do what, it's the old RCA gramophone label, isn't it? The dog sitting by the horn coming off the Victrola. His master's voice. Anderson Cooper is his master's voice.
You honeymooned in the Soviet Union!
Disgusting, really? Quite. So just watch for more of the same. Now let's see. The moderated debate is coming. It's not a debate. The moderated discussion is coming up in early November. Anybody want to check the lists in advance to find out how many millions of dollars NBC Universal Comcast has given to Senator Clinton's campaign? Well, Arthur has a difference of opinion with me. Arthur says, I say it's the demons, Brother Bob. He should be taken in with that family that locked their adoptive child for the demon of not sharing. No, you're probably right. Hi, Bob. Hi, Arthur. But speaking of demons, let's take a moment. I said in a posting last night that in a just world, this would wait for prayer meeting Wednesday, but it can't. It'll be old by then. And with something as heavy as red baiting and orchestrated smear jobs, oh, before we go there, by the way, just another little bit of Bernie news. Martin Shkreli, and they have Big Pharma has creams now that'll clear up the Shkreli on your Martin. Martin Shkreli tried to be cute. He donated some money to Senator Sanders' campaign. Shkreli tried to donate $2,700 to Senator Sanders' campaign. And Michael Briggs, who is the campaign spokesperson for the Sanders campaign, said, we are not keeping the money from this poster boy for drug company greed. The $2,700 instead will be given to the Whitman Walker Health Clinic in Washington. Shkreli has been whining for a debate with Senator Sanders, who, frankly, doesn't suffer fools gladly and doesn't really have time for pissants, I would presume. I don't dare to speak for Senator Sanders, but I guess that he probably wouldn't agree with me using the word pissant, but that's why I'm me and he's him. And Martin Shkreli is a pissant. After all, this is a guy who raised the cost of Daraprim, a medication often used by HIV patients, from $13.50 per pill to $750 per pill. And I think that falls under the general heading of, you know, pissant. And that's a mild term. Yeah. So good for you, Senator Sanders. Good for your campaign. Saw that money come in. And immediately sent that money back out. But anyway, speaking of demons a moment ago, and of course also in the line of demons, Arthur points out, the Soviet Union is Russia's gift to right-wing America more than 70 years and still going strong as a propaganda tool. Mm-hmm. Let's toddle over to Toledo, Ohio. Holy Toledo, as it were. Just a language moment, if I may. Does the phrase "Holy Toledo" is that just an Americanism, or does it have something to do with Toledo in Spain? I don't know. I just think about these things. You don't want to live. Remember that movie, Being John Malkovich? You don't want to live in my brain. It's full of spiders and scary things. Things that bite and make you scratch and wonder at stuff. Like, does Holy Toledo refer to Spain? But anyway, in Toledo, there lives a septuagenarian woman. A Republican, in fact. She'd kind of have to be now, wouldn't she? I mean, for this story to be this story, she's got to be a Republican. Her name is Opal Covey. And she is the self-described priestess of her neighborhood, according to an article in the Toledo Blade. And she has run for mayor of Toledo about 5 times and has never received more than 400 votes. And so with an election not far away, WIOT, a news talk station in Toledo, and apparently owned by Clear Channel, because they are part of the iHeartRadio family. She did an on-air interview with their air personalities, WIOT-FM. In fact, she did the interview with Fred Lefebvre. Hope I'm getting it right. Sorry, Fred. You look like a really cool guy to hang out with. Remind me, I've got to clip out some of the audio so it can just go into the rotation for prayer meeting Wednesday. But this is what happens after a generation of Republicans complaining about the liberal media. 75-year-old Opal Covey is convinced that Fred Lefebvre was out to get her. This is what happens off-air after the interview. Fortunately, people were rolling with their phone video.
This morning.
No, I tried to get you to give me details on your plan.
I can't give you every detail.
Because you're unable to, because you have no plan.
I'm seeing, I came back, and this word will rebuke you.
Okay.
And I don't know what God is going to do.
Did I mention that she's religiously insane? It probably could have been implied by the fact that I said we need to include parts of this clip in prayer meeting Wednesday going forward. But yeah, this is a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian.
I have no idea what he's going to do either. None of us
right.
know.
But you are coming up against the works of the Lord.
Okay.
And you're not accepting it, and you're
I
doing
am not.
You're right. Doing retaliation on me. Of course you are. And you're
not doing retaliation.
Yes,
just
you
want you to get specific about no. how you're going to do these things.
I cannot
the Lord
tell
has told you,
but exact what the Lord has told me.
Right.
But I've already had a phone call at home when I got home.
From the Lord?
Yeah. He says, Fred is trying to make a fool of you. You are the one that's the fool. To
do you know that in your good book right there, it says that if you don't get elected mayor, if you don't get the seat in November, that you are a false prophet? It's in the book. You can look it up.
Well, right now.
And right now, actually, you are a false prophet, because you said you were going to get elected before and you haven't been elected. So you are a false prophet, Opal Covey.
And right now, because you have called me a false prophet to my face.
Yes.
She's waving her Bible at him, by the way.
I will wipe the dust, the very dust of my feet off.
And she scratches her feet on the carpet like a cat leaving the litter box. Yeah, this is sweet. This is wonderful. She's wiping the dust from her feet. That, of course, is a biblical reference. Everything's a biblical reference for Opal Covey, apparently. Well, maybe I was partially correct. I am informed by Carol Baker, who is a giver, via an article that Holy Toledo may reference the proliferation of church construction in Toledo, or it may also, but Toledo, Spain is also referred to as the Holy City of Spain. So there you go. But anyway, back to wiping the dust off her feet. And she's either like a cat leaving a litter box, or she's like a bull getting ready to charge. And after all, poor Fred the on-air guy is wearing a red shirt.
against you.
That's what Jesus told the apostles to do when they went to cities that were unwelcome to them.
As a testimony against you. Mm-hmm. And whatever God does, the people will see it.
All right.
Opal, while you were out, Jesus called. He wants you to shut the up.
People will see it.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Poor Fred's trying to leave, trying to get her out the door, trying to get her on. Eh, move along. Got a show to do here. They pay me to do this. They don't pay me to stand around and talk to you off air, Opal. Goodbye now. Goodbye now. Don't go away mad. Just go away. Good to see you. Give my regard to the king and the queen and the ace and the jack of clubs. Goodbye now.
I rebuke you, and I curse that evil spirit within you, that what you have done to destroy me this morning shall destroy you. I speak in tongues against you. You are an evil man.
You weren't ready for the tongues, were you? Neither was I. Now you're giggling. Now, and you didn't even have the hockey puck anywhere near. And now the neighbors are knocking on the door, wondering what's wrong. Let's go back.
Apostles to do when they went to cities that were unwelcome to them.
As a testimony against you. Mm-hmm. And whatever God does, the people will see it.
All right.
The people will see it.
Fair enough.
I rebuke you, and I curse that evil spirit within you, that what you have done to destroy me this morning shall destroy you. I speak in tongues against you. You are an evil man.
I don't understand tongues. It's not going to work. I don't understand. Yeah. Me neither. Not at all. Even a little bit. Mm-mm. Oh, but we're not done. But wait, there's more. Yeah. Poor Fred. I mean, he's working in Toledo radio, okay? I got a pretty good idea what Fred's making. It ain't a lot, and it's not enough to have tongues spoken at you by an insane Christian lady running for mayor for the sixth time. You know the fun part about this speaking in tongues business? Anybody can do it. In point of fact, for those of you who saw the Minions movie, one of the most talented speakers of tongues that I'm aware of is my youngest grandson, who can, and then he'll throw in papaya, just like a Minion, because they love the Minions, my grandkids do. And I do too. Who doesn't? We have a Minion who overlooks the studio. He stands right by Sparky's dad's gnome, and in between the two gargoyles, who aren't gargoyles, by the way. There's another word for them, but I call them gargoyles. It's like the ancient Romans had their little household deities, and we sacrifice a whoopee cushion and a rubber chicken from time to time. Anyway, I want to hear them tongues some more.
The people will see it.
All right.
The people will see it.
Fair enough.
I rebuke you, and I curse that evil spirit within you, that what you have done to destroy me this morning shall destroy you. I speak in tongues against you. You are an evil man.
I don't understand tongues.
For the win. I don't understand tongues. But, you know, here's what's funny. The people who go to church with Opal, man, they back up when she starts that shit. Because they know she's serious. Oh, man, my whole day's ruined. Opal tongued at me.
I see Yeba sandalo shantaya. Cool, cool, I called. That's God speaking against you.
A Wimbleway, a Wimbleway.
That's for the win. A Wimbleway, a Wimbleway. Because Fred's speaking in tongues now. Has he been listening to Prayer Meeting Wednesday? Because, you know, that's my version of speaking in tongues. Remember when we get to the end of the opening hymn, and I say, Marysy Dotes and Dozy Dotes and Little Lambsy Divey, a Kiddly Divey too, wouldn't you? Yeah, speaking in tongues. Hutsut Rawson on the Rill Raw, or a Brawla Brawla Suet. Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang.
Guantanamera.
Kumbaya. Okay, I think.
For I say unto thee,
I don't
thou shalt not prosper.
All right, I
thou
won't
shalt
prosper.
Not prosper, and the Lord shall come forth.
Okay, he's coming forth. Did you wipe the dirt off enough, or do you need to wipe again?
Listen, Eddie, you're still.
Come on, I got work to do, Opal. You're done here.
I'm going to leave.
Yes, you are going to leave out this door. So come on.
Stand not upon the order if you're going, but go at once. That's when you bust out all Shakespeare there, Fred. Well, see, Arthur, you're just not schooled in doctrine and dogma enough. Arthur says, I thought speaking in tongues meant that you were voicing the Holy Spirit. I didn't know you could speak it against someone. Well, apparently God's pissed. Oh, Christians. Come on, Opal. You're done. Let's go, Opal. Yeah, the boys with the big butterfly net are here. Well, you know, one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit that comes with speaking in tongues is the power of interpretation, the gift of interpretation. And the Holy Spirit has just lingered over Carol Baker, who informs me, I speak tongues. She said, I will cut a bitch. Mm-hmm.
This way.
Throw me out. No,
nobody's throwing you out, but you have to leave. I have work to do with important people.
She obviously has not finished her coffee. That was provided her, but I mean, thou preparest a cup of coffee before me in the presence of my enemies. My cup hath not runneth over, and I ain't quite done with it yet.
No, you have to leave, dear. You're done with your interview. Mm-hmm. You have to leave now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now you're throwing me out.
Yes, we're throwing you out.
Uh huh. All right. Thank you very, very much for throwing me out.
You're welcome.
You've not only disputed God's word and God's prophet. But now you're throwing me out of the place.
Yes.
I say,
and you're supposed to wipe the dirt off your feet like God told the apostles.
We're trying to stay on script here, Opal.
Against you. Okay. Against you. And what
God
you your words.
Don't stay in a place you're not welcome. Move on to the next place, God.
You are throwing me out. Not the company, not the channel. But you are.
Yeah,
vengeance, saith the Lord, is upon you.
It's on me.
And it's coming on you.
I'm wearing red. It's the color of the devil.
Lord said,
I don't know what I can tell you.
The Lord said, to give way to wrath, which I am giving way to wrath right now.
All right.
Your wrath, disputing God and His word, it's against God, and it's not me.
All right, well, let's
say
give it way.
The Lord,
let's
vengeance
give way
is coming.
Let's give way this way.
Okay. All right. Let's give way this way.
Mm-hmm. Now watch him throw me out.
No, I'm not going to touch you. You're just because
no,
I don't want to.
No, you better not touch me.
Oh, I wouldn't touch you. Don't worry.
That's a different story. But hatred is so much
door.
In your eyes.
Here's the door.
Here. Bye now. Bye.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I wipe the dust again off of my feet against you.
Well, that's why we put that extra rug there. Other people come in and pick that up every week and clean it.
You will not be able to do this again to God's people
or
to anybody in the name of the Lord. He shall remove you from these premises, saith the Lord, and I command it.
Take all of those tongues in with you and go.
I know. It's nothing. It is absolutely zero in the larger scope of all the problems the world faces. And it's vacuous and meaningless. But it's wonderful. Gerald noting, she's speaking in tongues. Thanks, Obama. Well played, Gerald. Right on time. Indeed. I had to. And yes, I'll be I'll be clipping out some of that tongue speaking for use on prayer meeting Wednesday. It, by the way, my darling spouse, Agnes, says, you can't rebuke unless they're evil. You can't call down the wrath of God. That whole sending the son thing totally misses the mark with her. And last but not least, does she know she's actually worshiping Odin? Oh, for God's sakes, don't tell her that, honey. She'll rebuke on you. And getting rebuked on is worse than hairballs, trust me. Jack in Shreveport says, I still don't understand how people like Opal manage to feed and house themselves. At the risk of being sexist, I don't know how she got all that makeup on this morning, because but you know, that's just differences in Christian denominations. There are other Christian denominations out there that would flatly tell her that she is on the fast track to hell with all that Maybelline. Roger in Oregon, unknown test run. The secret is out. That lady was really Carly Fiorina test driving a new debate tactic. I rebuke you, Trump. She blah be stop getting mock. Wait. James Thurber was from Ohio. The next best thing to Mark Twain. And he was famous for the sound effects noises he would write. Onomatopoeia, maybe. Is that the right word? I don't know. But pocketa, pocketa, pocketa was one of them, and it was always a favorite. Pocketa, pocketa, pocketa. Wow. So here endeth the filibobster. It is 6 minutes past the hour. And as to tonight's fundraising goal, remember, there is a challenge on the table. And I need to give you an update. Remember, with her front porch, Friday on the front porch, odd change, Bob bust Bob's brain by making him cipher on the air challenge. Carol Baker, giver, took us down to $170.37 to go. And shortly thereafter, Randy took us down to $70.37 to go. And Joan in Indiana, thank you, Joan, took us down to, oh, dear God, that's going to be a problem. Let's see. Okay, and okay, so that's a 4, and so, let's see, that would be a 6, and I never know what to do. When, okay, so that maybe that's a 2, and there we go. We have $42.64 to go to meet Chris's Friday on the Front Porch Have a Show on Me challenge this evening. $42.64. That's 10 people at $4.26, $4.26 people at $10. And beyond that, I dare go no further, because we're only an hour into the program, and I gotta make it a little less than two hours, and if I start doing, oh my God, yeah. Yeah, so maybe it is. Yeah, so maybe it is onomatopoeia. Randy looked it up for us. He said, "I looked up the word onomatopoeia just last night." Ooh, the goddess of irony's spirit is moving upon the congregation, and it means a word that sounds like a noise, like hiss, oink, moo. Or pocketa, pocketa, pocketa. Mm-hmm. So we'll take a little break, and then we will fire up Friday on the Front Porch, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable for this Friday, the 16th day of October, 2015. Mm-hmm. And a reminder, if you would like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, you need to send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, on Skype. Skype's real easy to use. He'll help navigate you through the process, and you'll be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, on Skype. In the meantime, another reminder, 304-574-8178 will not be working because that's tied to the same computer. If you need to use a telephone to join into the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, please use the stress line, area code 304-663-4676. Thank you. We do appreciate your cooperation. And so, in the spirit of the one and only Opal Covey, a musical interlude while we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. This is The Horn.
For a ride in space. We met a little man with a funny, funny face. He taught us both to wail this way. Now nobody digs the word we say. And that means I love you. Read my baby loud and clear. She just said, I love you, dear. Now when I reply the way I do, I just said, I love you too. That means I love you. Come on, fly with me. Come on, fly with me. Come on, fly with me. And now, eep, op, means I dig you. You heard the word. And that crazy word. And that word you heard. Eep, op, means I love you. Hop on, baby, I'll put you in orbit.
The one and only Jet Screamer. From the Jetsons and Eep Op Ork Ah-Ah. Mm-hmm. I didn't go and look anything up, but I have a sneaking suspicion that the voice of Jet Screamer from that Jetsons episode is none other than the vastly talented, amazingly funny Howard Morris. I heard it in that little crack in his voice in that whole rockabilly thing going. Yeah, I think that was Ernest T. Bass. Mm-hmm. Jim reminding me, please do not forget Oscar Wilde's birthday. I didn't realize it was, but I'm glad to know it. Jim says, once had a great party and rolled down an embankment in a cloud of smoke. Fell out of the stirrups, did you, Jim? Okay, let's go over to the, and we've got somebody on the stress line as well, which will be cool. Let's run over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and its longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran moderator, namely Sparky, Hey, Sparky.
How you doing, Bob?
You know, I'm in pretty good spirits, I think.
Well, I'm not really in great spirits because Indian summer's ending. No more 90-degree days. It's slowly getting cooler.
Oh, darn. Does that mean you'll be able to be tolerate being in the man cave?
Oh, it's been tolerable the last week or so. Anything over 100 is not... When it gets 100, you can't really tolerate the place. But it's been in the low 90s the last few days. Only 88 today. But I've got the cows in the pasture and the faint smell of skunk weed in the evening.
Oh, really?
Neighbor's pot patch.
Oh, so I've never been that close to a pot patch. So it smells like that just... Well, of course it smells like that just growing. It's not like they spray something on it after they cure it, right?
Right. I mean, these plants are... I don't know when they're going to harvest them. They're starting to fall over. They're so top-heavy with buds on them. You can see them from the street.
Wow.
It'll be the last year they grow them, because they passed an ordinance here that all medical marijuana grows have to move indoors next year in our county.
Oh, by the way, I just had a note coming from Gerald. He said, please pass this along. Shut it, Sparky. It seems it would be that season again.
Well, I'm hoping that El Nino's on the way.
Because it's kind of...
I mean, it really busted a nut over Southern California yesterday, the rain.
Really?
You didn't hear about the flash floods and the mudslides?
No, sadly, I didn't.
Well, there's a place just before... have you ever heard of what they call the Grapevine on I-5?
Oh, yes.
Going out of... It's about 75 miles out of L.A. coming north. Well, I guess they had a cloud burst. And there may have been fires in the area or something. But they had mud just totally inundated the freeway and just stranded people. And they had to helicopter people out of this one little town that just got blown away with mud.
I missed that entirely.
And then they have one of them habab sandstorms.
Oh, the haboob? Yes.
Haboob?
Yeah, the sandstorms that make all the right winger Agenda 21 Common Core Sharia law freaks upset.
Well, they're having one in Phoenix today. So they're having all kinds of weird weather events down south. Nothing up here yet. I got my fingers crossed for rain. Rain and snow. I want to see white mountains again.
Oh, no kidding. Well, we're getting to that place here. The colors are really popping here now. And that's why we have Bridge Day when we do. It's the close of the Gauley season. Gauley River whitewater season. They've just about, because Summersville Lake is a dammed up portion of Gauley River, and through the year it gains in volume, and then at about, well, September, late August, they start opening the spillways to create these Class 6 rapids, and that's what people come from all over the world to do, to ride that river. And so they've just about got it all the water downriver now, and tomorrow culminates the end of Gauley season, and it usually happens right when the colors are at their best. But it's going to be cold tomorrow. The high tomorrow is 50, and hence Gerald's shut it, Sparky.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Gerald's sympathy factor is running a little low right now.
Well, our low the other night was 60 degrees.
Oh, okay. There's another one.
It's 87 degrees right now, and our low for today was 61 degrees. But tomorrow, there's a chance of rain. I hope it doesn't rain, because I've got to drive to Reading tomorrow to visit my stepson's coming down to visit his best friend that got in a bad accident. He's in the hospital in Reading. He's a timber faller that got caught up. Tree didn't fall on him, but the skidder operator pulled the tree over him, busted up his whole right, upper right torso, his arm, his chest.
And ouch.
He's going through a whole shitload of surgeries already.
I can well imagine. Come.
So he's coming down out of the mountains, and we're going up to Reading to meet, because he's like my stepson's other brother from a different mother. I mean, they grew up together, lifelong friends, and good friend of my wife's too, family and all that. So that's my day tomorrow.
Well, it's not very often I hear you say, "I hope it doesn't rain."
Well, I don't like driving in the rain.
Well, I don't either. Nothing.
That's why I said it. If it's raining, I'm staying home. That's fine. But if it's a hard rain, people get crazy in the rain. I've seen it. I mean, just come down in buckets on I-5, and people are still doing 70, 80 miles an hour.
Oh, of course. Why would that slow anybody down?
Well, you can hardly see sometimes. Windshield wipers can't keep up with it.
But by the same token, y'all can use it.
Mm-hmm. I guess Billable Rick is on the phone or something.
Being billable.
Yeah, but he contacted me early tonight and said he would be in. I know he said over a week ago, two weeks ago, he went to a Van Halen concert at the Hollywood Bowl. Don't know if he's been into any other concerts lately.
No, he mentioned the Scorpions, too, so that should be an enjoyable report.
Hmm.
Is Roger with us this evening?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, welcome back. Missed you last week.
All right, I hope I'm here. Let's put it that way.
No, you're here.
Okay. I've been busy with the garden and that kind of stuff and missing a few times and not sure about next week because I'll be in Chicago. But
oh, really?
Duncan, I'm glad to hear that it's cooling off over in the valley. We might be able to get some sunshine. Anytime it's hot over in the valley, it sucks in the marine layer. And we just get a gray sky all day and a high of around 60, 62. which, you know, the beans are still drying. I'm still picking and still shelling. And I've shelled out over 100 pounds already. And just doing the normal thing. But as soon as the valley cools off, we get our best weather.
And so what's the status of squash seed maturation?
Well, I've harvested five. Dried seeds have zero seed viability yet. They need to sit a while longer. I have 35 on the ground in the 20-pound range, and I'm letting them mature some more. And I got in touch with the folks back in Wisconsin, and they're a little upset that I'm not a native person growing the seed. They're not really amenable to my providing seed to Baker Creek for them to sell to the populace because they're wanting them to be in the native community.
Okay.
My local native community, who I've contacted twice about providing squash for their elder dinner, which they have in late November, and providing them the squash for their elder dinner, have not gotten back in touch with me at all. And when I get back from Chicago a week from now, I'll get back in touch with them again to find out if they want squash for their elder dinner. That came from Green Bay, and I'm just letting it mature and going to harvest the seed, and since they don't want me to sell it, I'll probably send them I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 seeds back to their seed bank and say, I've been very privileged to grow this squash. You don't want me to sell the seed? I've grown them. I've harvested them. I've processed the seed. And here you go. There's a couple of thousand more seeds you can send out to whoever you want. Go.
No, I was simply going to say that, you know, hopefully it'll. I don't know. I think the world's better with the squash in it than not in it.
Yeah, and the outfit that I deal with out of Missouri, Baker Creek Seed, is really into heirloom seed. I've passed along the contact information. I've talked about next year. I'm hoping that the owner of the company will get in touch with the people I talked to back in Green Bay, and something can be worked out to where next year the seed can be offered for regular sale. Now, that does not stop us from distributing it freely, as we have talked about before,
right,
as a premium to your program.
I need to
get some seed harvested, dried, and do my germination tests to where people are going to get seed that will be viable instead of eating them like pumpkin seeds.
Have you tried that?
Oh, they're not bad as pumpkin seeds, but they're harder to eat than sunflower seeds. I mean, I got 500 of them in a bowl sitting on my kitchen counter right now that I couldn't get any to germinate, but I've crunched them and munched them, and I mean, I didn't put any salt on them or anything like that. Not seasoned. They're just straight seeds, but they're harder to eat than sunflower seeds.
Like kind of leathery?
Oh, I guess they're just not quite dry enough, so they don't want to crack. And you bite down and they kind of bend, and then you got to pick them apart and get the kernel out of the center, and it's still soft, and they're just a pain in the butt to try to eat. But, you know, the flavor's fine. It's just they're a pain in the butt. So I think with more maturation, they'll be better. Now, I didn't try to eat any of the four you sent me because I planted all four of them.
Right.
But those seeds were pretty well dried and would have snapped open easier than the ones I've got. They're still really fat and wet in a sense, even though they've been thoroughly dried. So I'm hoping just more maturation will make it go. This is the first time I've ever tried to process squash seeds. I mean, I've been doing bean seeds for years, but the squash seeds are a new thing for me to work with, and all I can do is give this a try, give that a try, give the next thing a try, and eventually I'll get it right.
Well, we'll talk a little further about it and lay out some plans and so forth. I'll talk to some of my contacts relative to some of those other issues as well. Let me run over to, by the way, before I do, Chicago, fun trip, family trip, just carrying on, what?
It's a family, my father-in-law is 92, 93, and I think he's facing his end-of-life decisions, and one of my brother-in-laws just built a new house, and so we're doing a family reunion, a birthday, him going to visit, we're going to spend the week and then come back. So it's a family trip, and theoretically trying to get the wife's family to reconnect and all be friendly again and that kind of stuff. So yeah. I'm not really looking forward to it because it's whatever.
But it's smacks of the
I'm going and I'm doing it because it's family.
Right. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah,
exactly.
But I'll be there next Friday, and I don't know whether I'll be able to use my netbook or anything. So, you know, it might be a couple of weeks before you hear from me again.
Okay. Just don't slide off the planet or anything.
Well, as long as United keeps playing in the air, I'll be in pretty good shape.
Yep. Let's just keep them focused. Well, let's run over to the stress line. I think we've got someone on there. Hopefully, it'll work out. Hey, welcome to the group. Yeah, hey.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Just driving home from work from Boston and down the Mass Pike, doing about 1 mile an hour.
I was going to say it's probably not a racetrack, is it?
It's not. Those nights. Yeah, it's a horrible connection, I guess. But
no, you're coming through fine.
All right. You were talking last night about restaurant businesses. I got to post it on your Facebook page. A few weeks ago, I went took my we just got married, but my fiance at the time and our 8-year-old to Red Robin. And we escaped with a balloon. After three of us, it was about a $55 check. So I put on my Facebook that the Red Robin balloon that they gave us. No helium involved in this balloon at all. Despite $55 for two hamburgers and some chicken McNuggets to the 8-year-old. And my Republican friend posted something right away that this is what you get when you pay somebody $20 an hour. And this is before I even heard your tirade about that last night about restaurant workers. And I went back they make $2.35 an hour for the waitresses and minimum wage, maybe plus a dollar, which is probably, they probably make $8.50, $9.50 an hour for the kitchen help. He wasn't too pleased. Republicans really don't get backed. But anyways, I had a lot of stuff right on my mind.
Go right ahead. But I mean, look, at the end of the day, Republicans have an economic vision that is based on cheap labor. It's the heart and soul. Yeah. I remember years and years ago, I saw an analysis that said all conservatism boils down to cheap labor. And in a way...
What's that?
I said, all I was going to say is that in a way, even America's racism problem and slavery boils down to cheap labor.
Yes. Well, you look at Walmart's vision, Walmart's way of doing it is cheaper than slave labor. They don't have to house or feed them. They let us do it.
Yeah.
Housing them, if they had to build a building, make building or housing for them, even if it was a one room, a 10x10 room apartment for the whole family, that's still a lot of money. They make us do it. They don't pay any taxes, and then they make everybody else, the taxpayers, do it. But this guy was a friend of mine that I call the Republican. He's a glorified soda salesman. He's a stock boy, and he makes well over $20 an hour because he's a head salesman. But he calls himself a salesman. And but he brags that he gets paid $8 a day, but he only has to work 4. So he's making like $40-something an hour. And what he doesn't realize is I'm a heavy equipment operator, and I get paid too much. Anybody can do my job if you ask him. But what I always telling him is when Rush Limbaugh tells him that I get paid too much money, he's not just talking about me; he's talking about him too.
Oh sure, your buddy would love it down here in West Virginia, where the presumptive Republican gubernatorial nominee says that people like you make an unfairly high wage.
Yes, and this is coming from somebody who's making $60 million a year.
That's our boy.
I'm just glad he can't enjoy his music because he used to be a audiophile, and he can't listen to music anymore. He used to love listening to symphonies and band music, and he can't listen to anything anymore because he made himself deaf with all those drugs. That badass is that fat ass took too much hillbilly heroin, made himself deaf. I love it. I love it.
That is one of the little known side effects of opioid abuse. You know, going deaf.
Yes. You were talking about, getting back, you were talking about Bridge Day. I was able to go to Bridge Day when I went to Beckley to the Mind Academy back in 99. That was something to see. I really enjoyed the day down there doing that.
It's amazing.
It really is.
For somebody like me who's a little bit on the paranoid side, it's kind of a little bit scary, 100,000 people on that bridge, but hey, the engineering works.
Yes, it is a very beautiful bridge. And if you're there, take the trip down, the old trip down one side and up the other side. Nice trip.
Oh, yeah, and that was the only way to get across once upon a time. Go all the way down from the top of the mountain to the bottom of the gorge, cross the river, and crawl back up.
And don't bring your dog if you're going to Bridge Day. They will not let you on that bridge.
No, they don't. No pets.
Yeah. I see a lot of people walk all the way to the bridge, and they have to turn around and bring their dog back to their car. So, just leave them home. But anyways, I still have a t-shirt from there.
Oh, do you? Well,
it's gotten
even bigger. I mean, there's zip lining now. If you ever get a chance, you need to make it back down.
Oh, I'd love to go back down there. Maybe my next honeymoon next year. Our anniversary. Maybe I can get down there. Beautiful area. I want to see it again before it's flattened completely out.
That's probably a good idea, because that's one of the things that's sort of disheartening about all of the business about, oh, this is the end of coal. Coal's done. I would be just fine if Mother Jones and In These Times and Common Dreams and Alternet and Huffington Post never published another article saying coal is done, because that just makes it ignorable. That just means, because that's a dog whistle to our side that, okay, it's okay. It's okay to ignore Appalachia again.
Yes. I've seen a lot of disparity down there when you drive the backwoods and, you know, the back roads. You see a lot of what you think are storage shacks, and people are living in them. Literally, it's disheartening seeing that. But it's the beginning of the South.
Yeah, and just remember that bridge was built, as Gerald notes over in the Skype chat group. Just remember, that bridge was built with unfairly high wages.
Yes, true.
Imagine what kind of a bridge you'd get if it was built by guys making $4 an hour.
Oh, that would yeah, those union iron workers who built that.
Darn straight.
I remember right.
It was the mid '70s, so it was union everybody. And it was fascinating from an engineering standpoint, because of course we've got all kinds of old mines that nobody knows about. And one of the stories that was told was that when they were pouring, you know, there's one footer on one side and one footer on the other, and that's it. And when they were pouring the footers on one side, they hit an abandoned mine, and they had to go into crisis mode and pour. They poured concrete for something like 30 continuous hours, because if they had so much as a single seam, the integrity of the bridge would have been compromised.
Yeah. Yes. I'd like to get back down there. Well, a bartender I knew down there, I asked her if she ever moved, you know, if she lived there her whole life, and she said, well, I've lived here, and I tried, you know, I went down in Virginia, and she said, but these mountains always call me home, which is the way she said it. She said, these mountains always call me home. And I can understand it after being there. I've been down there 4 times for school, and it is a very beautiful place. It kind of reminds me of Western Mass in some part. Sometimes.
Well, Western Mass is the Appalachians, too.
Yeah. All right, let you go.
All right, well, I'll let you get back to your 1 mile. I'll let you get back to your 1 mile an hour driving. It's good to hear from you.
I see the police lights up ahead. And I think I threw it. It was an accident.
Ah.
So I'm hoping.
Well, a great weekend to you.
I'm working all weekend.
All right.
14-hour days. Have a nice weekend.
All right. Thanks. You too. Bye now. Yeah, more of those unfairly high wages. Jeez.
It's even more on the weekends.
Yeah. Kind of, but it, I mean, isn't that disgusting? And if you add into that mix, Bill Cole's going to be the Republican nominee for governor in West Virginia, and he says that anybody who's making more than a nickel an hour makes an unfairly high wage, and yet he wants people to buy his cars off of his car lots. And so you're thinking, well, okay, no way I'd vote for an asshole like that. I'll vote for the Democrat. Gerald, do you want to pick it up from there?
Do I have to? I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. I mean, okay. What he was talking about, you know, about the I just caught part of the conversation. They went to a restaurant, and his Republican buddy said, "That's what you get when you pay $20 an hour."
Yeah.
That goes back to the whole right wing mindset of screw you, I got mine, you get yours. It's pretty much how they. That's the whole way they look at everything, you know. And that's pretty much what we see here, isn't it?
Well, it is, and of course we had that clip last night from those those impoverished souls on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, sitting there complaining that people won't hustle if they're not starving to death.
Right, yeah.
Well, I mean, they're getting your meal out to you. How much more hustle do you want from the immigrants working in the kitchen?
Well, they're not machines either, you know? Yeah, yeah. Angela Tarantula?
Andrea Tarantula.
She worked in her father's restaurant? Yeah, right. You believed all that, didn't you?
Hook, line, and sinker.
Well, a lot of people do. It doesn't matter. It's all Obama's fault.
Yeah, and consequently, that's your line.
Yeah. Well, funny that would come up. I've been doing some work that's put me out and around a lot of people here lately, and the people of in this area, anyway, in this region of the state, genuinely hate the president of this country.
Yes.
They genuinely blame him for single-handedly destroying the coal industry. I mean, he did it all by himself.
He came down here in the dark and still of the night and did it, didn't he?
I guess. And you just can't reason with people. You know, I don't get confrontational with anyone. I just kind of feel it out in the conversation. You can kind of tell where they're going. And the majority, I mean, like 99%, think that he's just the worst thing that's ever happened to this country.
So you going to hear him speak?
No, there's not going to be any. There's not going to be any hearing him speak, is there?
I don't know. No, I don't.
What's he going to do there then? He ain't going to make a speech?
No, he's flying down here for a serious policy meeting with law enforcement, health care, mental health, and other people who have to deal with the drug disaster going on.
Oh, so it'll be in a big room with a round table.
That's about the size of it.
Yeah, I have to work anyway, so at my unfairly high wage paying job.
There's a link up now where you can ask questions of the president. Of course, 99.9% of them will be, as Gerald notes, why do you hate Co?
Why aren't you a friend of Co?
I saw Ed Rabel post on Facebook. Did he get something printed in the Charleston Gazette?
Oh, those were a couple of older columns of his.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does op-eds from time to time.
Well, he was saying he was hoping that somebody would show him to the president.
they might, but he's not going to be welcomed. I mean, it's not going to be. There'll be a lot of protesters outside wherever it is, I'm sure, with their signs, Obama and his evil EPA and all that kind of silly horse shit. And you know, even when I try to use logic with some of these people, I say, you know, yeah, the regulations have tightened up, and rightly so, but that's not what killed the coal industry.
Fracking killed the coal industry.
Exactly. I said the natural gas boom killed the coal industry. There's no market for the dirty stuff.
There is a market, Gerald, but the biggest thing that killed the coal industry in Appalachia is the fact that, and I don't want to put too fine a point on it, they've mined it all.
All the easy coal, yeah.
I was told by one guy, the former miner, that there's 6-foot coal over in Clay County, but it happens to be under the Elk River, right under the Elk River. And if you if they go after it, the Elk River winds up in somebody's front yard and over somebody's rooftops.
Yeah. Well, you know, but even with all of that, I mean, the market is disappearing for coal. I mean, there's going to be coal around for a long, long time. I mean, you have to have it to make steel.
Well, countries are using it for thermal, you know, for heat purposes too, electricity purposes.
What I understand, like they say, well, Russia and China is buying all our coal. And I don't think that's quite the case anymore. I don't think they're buying what they were.
The market is softer than it was, Gerald, but it's still moving. The coal trains are still going, leaving here and headed to Norfolk. But it's slowed down a little bit. China's trying to burn less coal because that country has a problem that it has to deal with. Beijing looks like Pittsburgh in 1912.
Yeah.
You know, where it looks like midnight at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And
have you ever been over there where they load that coal out?
Oh yeah.
It's unbelievable, the big mountains of coal.
Oh, that huge! There's a huge terminal on the Kanawha River.
Yeah, but the ones over in Norfolk dwarf that.
Oh yeah. They do, and it's going out, and you know the Energy Information Administration, I think is the EIA, I think is the name of them. It's a government agency, and they estimate that coal demand will continue to rise globally until like the 2030s, and then it'll level off. It will that means it'll level off at that higher level. It's not going away, but what has happened in Appalachia is, I mean, and frankly, the thing that just makes me want to chew rebar and spit rivets is all these ignorant friends of coal who don't understand that the Obama administration has done next to nothing to impede the practice of mountaintop removal. I would know because I've been among those who have been begging them to do something for 7 years. I mean, I remember when he was elected, Gerald.
Oh yeah.
And we thought, okay, we'll finally get some relief. Bupkis. I mean, you can talk about CO2 restrictions, but those are more easily met by simply accessing frack gas. And even the EPA CO2 rules were full of loopholes. I mean, the CO2 rules, when they were promulgated, West Virginia was already at 50% compliance with 20 years to go.
But also, when he was elected, too, you thought we might get some common sense gun laws, too, didn't you?
Yeah, well,
see?
I thought maybe we'd leave Afghanistan.
You're just too trusting, Bob.
They got to keep that big Air Force base open over there in Afghanistan.
Well, heck yeah. And there's lots of stuff we want to blow up and dig up in the ground in Afghanistan, like lithium. We're going to need lots of lithium.
Yeah.
I mean, they built those buildings over there in that Air Force base for the last 50 years at least. Huge hangars and stuff.
And we're not, you know, we're not going to just bug out and leave and let things like pipelines just go to pot.
No, we only do that. We only let infrastructure go to pot here in this country.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we have to, you know, fund all these damned illegal wars. Oh, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you did, but I think that's okay.
Okay. Well, I mean, the whole Iraq thing, that was that not an illegal war? I mean, we invaded a sovereign country who had made no attack on us. I mean, am I wrong?
Right, and I remember when candidate Obama ran saying, Afghanistan is the right war, and Iraq is the wrong war.
Well, there may be some, I would somewhat agree with that, but, you know.
If you've got to have a war, yeah.
Well, there's still remnants of Al-Qaeda there, you know.
Well, I don't know if I even want to, you know, voice my opinion on it. Well, what the hell? You know, if we'd leave those people the hell alone and let Israel do whatever Israel wants to do and just say, hey, you're on your own, they wouldn't hate us near as much.
No, or if we had a foreign policy that said we will happily provide billions of dollars in food to the rest of the world, but not one damn bullet.
Right. But, I mean, isn't that what it boils down to? I mean, doesn't it all come right down to Israel? I mean...
In that region, yes.
Yeah. That's what I meant, in that region.
Ever since, you know, 1948?
Yeah. It's a mess, I know.
But I really don't... I don't have a working handle on what there is to be done for President Obama here. He's welcome to come here, but like you and like most of the other progressives in this state, I worry about him because you know we people I know have been recipients of the violence of which the fiends of coal are capable.
Well, the other thing that I see, you know, Ed Rabel's posts on Facebook are one of the best ones to see the comments. And then you can go to the, you know, like the Gazette Mail website with the article of Obama's coming to visit. Just the comments alone is very telling. And you see a lot of stuff like, why is he coming here? He doesn't care about us. And then my first initial reaction is, and why the hell should he? You know, this state, the Democrats of this state elected a convicted felon or nominated a convicted felon over him in the primary.
Absolutely.
And why should he give a shit? I mean, really, why should he care?
So, I mean, do you have an answer? Because I don't.
I don't know.
Why is he coming here?
Well, certainly not to stump for Bernie. I don't know. I, you know, guilty conscience? Do you have any idea? I mean,
no, I'm licked.
New war on drugs?
Did the old one ever end?
But, I mean, the thing is, everything that I'm reading says that, you know, there's not going to be any public statement. There's not going to be any speechifying.
So he's going to get off the plane, go downtown to some banquet room, talk for an hour or so.
And probably at the Marriott, you know.
And get back on the plane, go back to D.C.
Get one of them Secret Service SUVs with the miniguns in it and go down to...
I don't know. He might stop along the way and close some coal companies or lay off some hardworking miners.
Yeah.
Because that's what he does.
Yeah, drown some coal miner babies in the creek or something.
Yeah.
When you were talking about Air Force One landing there at that Jaeger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Jaeger's not very much shorter than the runway in Reading. W landed in Reading during the fires in 2008. No problem with that big plane.
Well, the thing about Jaeger is it's even shorter than it was before.
Yeah.
Because part of it slid off.
Yeah,
slid into the river. or slid into somebody's backyard.
Well, it slid into Elk 2 Mile Creek. Keystone Drive is the road that goes between there and the next hill. And it, yeah. But that really was a part of the runway. That was part of that EMAS system, where they have the blocks that crumble when the plane goes in them. So if they go off the end of the runway, they don't careen into the valley below.
Yeah, but Air Force One can land on a lot shorter runway than a normal 747 because Air Force One flies light. Our local airport here would never. Well, I'm talking back when McCarthy and LBJ was president, and they were using a 707. And this runway up here won't land a 707 for a commercial flight because they're too heavy. But the presidential 707 could land here because it was so light. It needed a shorter runway than the normal 707 runway length had to be. So, you know, I mean, a fully loaded with, 450 passenger 747 now.
Can still land and take off here.
Oh, yeah, can still land and take off.
They used to do it back in the 70s all the time. I flew one out of here, as a matter of fact, back in the 70s. It's either 747 or DC-10. One of the bigger planes. They used to fly them out of here.
But well, this airport here never had, well, I can remember DC-3s, but anyhow, the fact is that the only time a 707 has ever landed at this local airport, I live about a mile and a half south of the end of the runway, no 747 passenger or 707 passenger will ever come in here. But the presidential plane came and landed because they're so light compared to the normal run that I wouldn't worry about the presidential plane coming in because I'm sure they've researched the runway length and all the rest of that crap they need. By the way, hi, Rick.
Well, what are the...
Hey, how you doing, Roger? I got a question here. Is there any way that I can still win the Hitler lottery, or has Gerald gotten it?
I win every night.
Yeah.
I can't win.
He's got a time machine.
What does the Speaker of the House is playing? Is it a 707 or a 727? What are those planes? Because they're painted up like Air Force One as well.
I don't know. I was just thinking back. I remember when Bush came here early in his first term, and it was not a 7-4.
Well,
and of course, like I said, whatever plane the president's on is Air Force One.
I see them fly and land here all the time because I live like right across the river from the approach, so they come right over my house. And they fly those around here a lot. And someone once told me that they keep their qualifications up for short runways or something. But the most scary thing is when the C-5 Galaxy flies over and lands there, because it's like an eclipse here at my house.
Yeah, those things are huge.
And it's got this eerie sound to it. Yeah, I can hear it coming long before it gets here. And then you go out and you look up and you're like, oh, wow. It's the plane's got a lot of wheels on it.
I got it.
When is the president due in your fair area, Bob?
The 21st, I think. I mean, he'll fly in on what is that, Wednesday?
Okay.
That's the last thing I read. He'll fly in and out on Wednesday. I mean, it's a 45-minute ride from D.C. to here.
So he's coming into, is it Charleston or Beckley or where is he going to be?
Charleston.
Oh, okay. Okay. And basically the emphasis is on the drug abuse addiction, the drug abuse epidemic.
Right.
Meth and so forth. Is that the idea?
No, it's opioids. It's hydrocodone, right. Oxycodone,
okay.
Heroin in particular.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's going to introduce a major policy of the federal government to make marijuana legal to allow people to get weaned off of all these opiates, huh?
Yeah, don't count on
it. Don't think so. Don't think so. I think he tends to lag behind popular opinion by quite a bit, and then he tries to march to the front and say, hey, I'm in favor of this now, you know? Typical leader, though. I'm not disparaging him for, you know, for being slow on the uptake as far as, you know, marriage equality and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, and we're worth paying attention. You know, it's a shame that we're number one in this, but we're number one in something.
Wow.
In the last 5 years, 2,900 people in this state have died on prescription painkiller ODs or heroin.
Did we lose our spot on smokeless tobacco use? I thought we were number one for that as well.
I haven't checked. Maybe we are.
We were. I do know we were at one time. Held that for a couple of years anyway.
How about having the worst teeth in America? Are you guys number one on that or not?
Probably in the top five.
Yeah, okay. Us, Mississippi.
Alabama.
Arkansas.
Yeah.
The Gazette is telling people that President Barack Obama will be answering questions from Gazette mail readers during his upcoming community meeting in Charleston. Questions and comments should pertain to the problem of opioid use disorders and overdoses involving prescription drugs or heroin. Send your questions to blah, blah. Please include your first name and hometown with your question or comment, although you may choose to use your full name.
Mm.
But, yeah, 2,900 people dead in the last 5 years in this state.
Jeez. What's the population of your state, Bob?
What, Gerald, about 1.5 million?
Yeah, about 1.6, 1.5, something like that.
So over 5 years, that's like about 6,000 a year divided by 1.6 million. That's how many per thousand? Quite a few.
Well, per 100, the rate is the highest in the country. It's, 38 per 100,000.
Wow. Hmm.
I'm sorry, 34.
Hmm.
Go us.
The national rate is 13 per 100,000.
Hmm. Jeez. Wow. Wow.
And 90% of the overdose deaths have come from heroin and prescription pain pills.
Wow. That's...
We had an epidemic of pill mills, these pain clinics.
Yeah.
I think they've kind of curtailed that some. I know there was some legislation passed a couple of years ago. But, that, you know, people still get them.
And again, this goes...
The heroin, though? You know,
pill mills? They were Oxycontins and
yeah.
Hydrocodone.
But I tried to describe it a little bit last night. The problem is twofold. You cannot talk about the heroin problem in West Virginia without talking about the gun problem in Detroit or Chicago, okay? Because West Virginia is one of those states where guns abound and they are easily obtained. So let's say
your local trading post.
Yeah, so right. So let's say you come down from Detroit, you drive down. For instance, Ripley, West Virginia, has a horrible addiction problem, and Ripley is a little bit of nothing. But
it's very rural.
Yeah, it sits Jackson County, of which Ripley is the county seat, is about, 45 minutes north of Charleston on I-77. And it sits hard by the interstate. And oddly enough, it is burning to the ground with prescription pain addictions and heroin. And when we're talking about a little West Virginia county, maybe it's hard for, say, somebody like you, Rick, who lives in a huge metropolitan area to comprehend. We're talking about a sheriff's deputy's office that might have what, Gerald? Maybe 40 deputies? Tops?
That would be a lot, wouldn't it? I was thinking more like 20, 15 or 20.
Yeah, because, I mean, we
for
got...
For the whole county.
For the whole county.
Okay. That's yeah, not... the city may probably has 5 or 10 officers.
Yeah.
And most of those are probably part-time.
And then the state police barracks has maybe 4 state troopers.
Yeah, probably.
And so you can see that's a situation where everything gets over... I mean, the system just, bang, immediately is overwhelmed. They don't even have a circuit judge. I mean, they got maybe three magistrates in Ripley, probably 2. They got a circuit judge who is there once every 3 weeks because he rides circuit between Jackson County, Roane County, and Calhoun County. I mean, this is not the kind of infrastructure, legal infrastructure that you want for dealing with a mass narcotics epidemic.
But think about Mayberry, North Carolina, from the Andy Griffith Show.
Yeah, that's Ripley.
Literally.
They've got a giant 4th of July celebration that brings a lot of people out. It's a charming little town. Instead of a Confederate traitor on their courthouse lawn, they've got a statue of a Civil War soldier dedicated to the Grand Army of the Republic, a Union soldier, because Ripley sent her sons to the Union side. You know, out by the interstate, that you've got, you know, a couple of Mexican restaurants, a couple of Chinese restaurants, a big ass Walmart, a Super 8, a handful of gas stations, a Quality Inn, and Jackson General Hospital. Again, a wee tiny little hospital that doesn't even do appendectomies, I don't think.
Jeez, I would have been in trouble there. I had an emergency appendectomy about 8 years ago.
Well, your ass gets sent 45 miles south to Charleston.
Yeah.
They fly the helicopter out there to get you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I had peritonitis. That was pretty serious. I had it for like 48 hours without knowing that my appendix had burst.
It's a very rural county. It was mostly agricultural up until...
Mm. Up until the oil and gas thing has always been there, but it wasn't an overarching presence like coal is in a coal county. And so what happens is the criminal element brings down, I mean, this is a classic mercantile exchange. The criminal element brings heroin down and pills from Detroit and money. And sells it and takes the money from it because guns are harder to get in Detroit and Chicago and places like that. And they get some of their buddies who have West Virginia driver's licenses and such to go in and make, and you know as well or better than anybody, Rick, what a straw purchaser is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And your straw purchaser purchases guns, which your friendly neighborhood heroin supply retail, a wholesaler, then puts in his trunk and drives back to the north.
Right, to using their armed drug conflict.
Right, so whenever you hear some right-winger say, yeah, well, that Obama never talks about Chicago. Well, okay, let's talk about Chicago. Let's talk about the fact that Chicago is Chicago relative to guns, because in Chicago you can't get them. But you just come down here to Jesus land, where people sell more guns than socks.
Now, speaking of Chicago, Bob, while you're on that subject, I'd heard that there was a study done, some investigative journalism done, as to where all these guns in Chicago were coming from, and I'd heard that like half of them came from the state of Mississippi.
Well, and you know what? Oddly enough, a bunch of them come from Milwaukee because a gun store there just got taken down. Badger Arms.
Yeah.
And it was so bad there that the gun purchaser and the straw buyer would walk in, and they're filling out the ATF form, and so the guy behind the gun store counter says, and are you the actual purchaser? And the guy goes, not really. And then they erase it, and then they put back, yes.
By law, it was supposed to stop the sale right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that ends the transaction.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Bob. Do you think there's a chance that Obama is going to make the connection between the mercantile exchange of heroin for guns or not?
I'd say he already has.
Has he?
I would say.
And, of course, if he comes down here and does that, like if he had a press conference or something, that'll just inflame the hillbillies even more. See, I told you he was coming for our guns. We don't care what them damn Yankees up in Detroit do, shooting each other all to pieces. Fuck 'em. We got to protect freedom down here in West Virginia because Mountaineers is always free.
It's in the state constitution.
Do you have a right to bear arms under West Virginia Constitution?
You damn straight.
It's even less vague than the U.S. Constitution.
I mean, it's enshrined in the Constitution that if you want to strap on a piece and carry it openly and notoriously down Main Street, that is your West Virginia constitutional right.
And do you see a lot of fellow West Virginians exercising their
damn Skippy
constitutional rights? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I don't see many. Not open carry. I don't see many people open carry. And if they're carrying concealed, that's, you know, you shouldn't see it if you're doing
Is that allowed, like, as a matter of right, concealed carry in West
Virginia? It is a matter of right, but you have to jump through the hoops. And
you got to get approval, though.
It's not hard.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Yeah.
Like I said, once...
$100, $125, something like that.
And once upon a time... there was a sheriff's office in West Virginia where the fax machine for the background checks, the output of the fax machine for the background checks just fell into the garbage.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God.
Because the sheriff said, listen, I ain't got time to detail a man to sit there and investigate every human being who wants to carry a gun in this county. And to be fair... He didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a matter of, you know, basically underfunding the government to the point where they can't function effectively, and then the Republicans say, see, government doesn't work. You know, government is the problem. It doesn't work. But they make it so it doesn't work. You know?
And that is that's the master plan.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Have you guys heard about what Gavin Newsom's doing?
No.
You know who Gavin Newsom
Mayor is? Of San Francisco.
No, he's a lieutenant governor.
Yeah, lieutenant governor. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah.
He wants to put a ballot measure on the ballot for gun control stuff. What he said, if we continue to fight the National Rifle Association on their home court, which is the legislative front, I think we will continue to be frustrated.
Read his proposal, I don't find it, and I'm a gun owner. I'm a very progressive liberal Democrat gun owner. But his propositions and what he's asking for, to me, is very reasonable. It is continuing the ban on the assault weapons. It is getting rid of the huge magazines. The only thing I don't quite agree with is a background check every time I want to go and buy a box of 22 caliber shells to shoot gophers in my garden, that the ammo shop has to run a background check on me to allow me to buy a box of 22 ammunition. And the only reason that would be there is because 22s can be in a handgun. If I want to buy rifle ammunition, from what I've read, and I may be wrong, it doesn't fit into the category. But his proposal, to me, is a very legitimate get the weapons of mass destruction off the street and give the deer hunters, gopher hunters, elk hunters, bear hunters, and all the rest of that.
Squirrel hunters.
If you want to plink squirrels out of the tree in your backyard, yeah, it's going to be a little harder to get ammunition. But about 15 years ago, I remember having to sign a ledger in the store when I bought 22 shells. So it's not that bad if you look into it. But I'll guarantee you the NRA is going to have it screaming all over the place. And when I go down to my local bar, all the NRA gun nuts are going to be totally up in arms with false bullshit that they're going to get off of faux news.
They're coming to get our guns. Oh, no, well, Marvel. You know,
but, I mean, the hope is that California is one of those places where you can stick it in the NRA and break it off and get away with it.
Well, that's true. Because the majority of Californians live in urban area. And I'm sorry, Alpine County and Shasta County and Trinity County and the rest of you weirdos, including you, Sparky.
I'm in Tehama County.
Tehama, okay, I'll add that in there. Super right-wing dumbasses are simply totally outvoted. And, you know, we got a problem here in Humboldt County getting outvoted every once in a while, too. But I think that
Why would that possibly be, Roger? As far as getting out to vote in Humboldt, do people do things that maybe prevent them from getting out?
No. What I'm saying is that the major metropolitan areas like Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, whatever they choose to do is going to happen in the state. Right. When you get Humboldt, Tehama, Alpine, Siskiyou, Trinity, and a bunch of counties further south, down around Fresno, Bakersfield, which is the real white right-wing area of the state, the population is such that if San Francisco, L.A., and Sacramento decide they're going to pass a gun bill, it's going to be statewide, which is one of the things I like about Bernie with Bernie Sanders with his the gun stuff needs to be decided kind of locally, because come on, the folks that are living over in Alpine County or Tehama County or even here in Humboldt County, our gun issues are totally different than the streets of San Francisco or Los Angeles or Sacramento or Bakersfield.
Well, and you used to be able to say that about a rural county like where I live, but again, with what we were just describing with that mercantile exchange between, say, Detroit and Huntington, Huntington is the most affected city in the state vis-a-vis pills and look, you know, so again, it's the we got a snake problem, let's get some mongooses, oh my God, we've got a mongoose problem thing, you know, we got, you know what I mean. So yeah, we crack down on pills, we get heroin, we crack down on heroin. Guess what? Enterprising hillbillies are out there now making bathtub fentanyl.
Oh God. Well,
thanks Eisenhower for the interstate highway system.
Well, I'm not, but I mean it's not a terrible thing to have interstates, but
but thanks Obama, thanks Eisenhower.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, let's hang on a second. Let's run over to the stress line. We've got a brand new entrant to the Friday on the Front Porch conversation. We have Charles. Hey, Charles, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I've listened to your program quite a bit on the White Rose streaming. I don't know. It seems like you moved off. Y'all used to come on after Malloy was through with his program.
Well, we did. Ben Birch went on vacation, and so that meant he wasn't recording for Malloy, and I need to talk to him about that, but that should go back into line.
And you know, it seems like on this program that there's a lot of people that make a lot of sense. The candidate that makes the most sense to me, just good common sense, is Bernie Sanders. And I live in Gallatin, right outside of Nashville, Tennessee.
I know exactly where it is.
The people down here that just don't seem like they understand that they're voting against their own self-interest if they don't vote for somebody like Bernie.
Well, you live on. I mean, that's the greater Nashville, what, Davidson County area?
Well, it's actually in Sumner County. It's right across Old Hickory Lake from Davidson County.
Right. Okay, yeah. You know what? I was thinking of Goodlettsville. My bad. But no, I know Gallatin as well. Isn't your Congress critter, oh God, now I can't, not Diane Black, but, Marsha Blackburn?
Oh, don't even bring that name up.
Goodness.
Yeah. I mean, she's not in the real world. I think she just thinks that everything's, you know, in a fantasy world, and, you know, and she doesn't realize that people are having a hard time, you know, things are pretty hard for people right now, and she just doesn't seem to realize that.
Well, I think she realizes. She just doesn't much care, because, you know, she's using that tried and true Republican strategy that as long as everybody's able to go to church, they'll be okay, even if they're down to eating the steel can that the beans came in. Well, let me ask you this, Charles, since we've never had a chance to talk before, has Bernie been to Tennessee yet?
I don't think he has. I could be wrong about that.
Because, I mean, that greater Nashville area has got some pockets of some fairly progressive people, doesn't it?
Not really. It's you talk about people going to church. I was noticing on your program earlier where you had some woman speaking in tongues, and that, you know, that's fairly common with the people around here, you know.
That's any given Sunday in Tennessee or Alabama. I mean, I know.
And it's you know, people just need to wake up, and they need to look what situation they're in, and, you know, again, come back to the real world. I mean, Diane Black and Marsha Blackburn, they don't represent the people of Tennessee. They represent people with money.
Is Steve Cohen still in the House from over in Memphis?
I don't know if he is or not. I lived over in Memphis for a while. I used to work at the Revenue Service as a contractor with a company, and we maintained a mainframe computer over there back in the day. And I haven't been over there. I still work in electronics right now. I work in a company that maintains banking equipment and safes and ATMs and all.
Well, I just wondered, because I think it was pretty, when Steve Cohen was there, he was pretty clearly the most progressive person that Tennessee had in their congressional delegation.
Yeah, but you got to remember, if you've ever lived in Shelby County, there is the people out in the, well, I don't know how it is today, but used to whenever I lived there back in the late 80s and early 90s, you had the people out in the county, and, you know, they just wished that the city of Memphis would go away. And, you know, it's very unfortunate. You had people that were extremely poor, and, you know, the people out in the county, the wealthy people out in Shelby County just really didn't care. And I've never seen a civilized society like that.
And Steve Cohen is still in the House from Memphis, and has been since 2007. I would be curious to know. He seems like a shoe-in as a Bernie supporter, but I presume nothing anymore. I only queried as to whether Bernie had been to Tennessee, because, you know, there was the labor issue relative to the Volkswagen plant, which, you know, produced, among other things, that diesel Passat that's become a millstone around Volkswagen's neck. And yeah, I can't help but think, well, I can't think of anywhere that Bernie's message doesn't have a real resonance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bernie Sanders, the thing that impresses me about Bernie Sanders is he's getting up in years, and I don't think he really is looking for a political career or anything. He just wants to do what's right.
He is literally trying to save this country, and in some ways from itself, Charles. And I've seen an argument coming from some of the Hillary people on Facebook lately saying, you know what? I want to keep that magnificent Bernie Sanders in the Senate. We really need him in the Senate, and that's why I'm voting for Hillary. Well, unless what I read was untrue, Bernie has said he's done with the Senate at the end of this term.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a non-starter.
He just sees how big of a mess things are in, and I think he's honest enough where he just wants to put things back in order, and, you know, then he'll probably be through with the presidency. He'll be, you know, he'll be more up in years then, and, you know, he probably just wants to take a shot at the presidency and just see if he can't put things back together. I'll be 61 years old the 24th of this month.
Happy birthday.
And I have never in my life seen people that just really don't give a crap about people that are really in need. I mean, it just really boggles my mind. And the racism now is, I mean, there was racism, you know, that at least people kept it out in the open in earlier days. Now it's kind of, you know, people just don't admit it, and it's rampant. I mean, you know, it's.
Have you been in Tennessee all your life, Charles?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Northeast Tennessee in a town called Kingsport up near the Virginia border.
Well, that's where Don Blankenship lives now.
And
Vegas. He's got a company in Kingsport.
Yeah. And I used to work at a plant up there that manufactured data processing equipment. His name was Sperry Univac, and then it got shut down, and I moved to San Antonio.
Well, I mean, I was going to ask because you raised up the racism issue. You're about 9 years older than me, and of course I spent my youth growing up in northwest Alabama. And you know, I saw that open and overt racism too, but since you've got a few years on me, growing up, I mean, it got better, but it has gotten worse since it got better, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. I mean, you know, people don't realize, and here's what really, really blows my mind, that people don't realize that a person of, say, a different race, there's just very minor genetic differences like eye color and maybe the texture of hair and color of skin. But underneath that, we're all the same. We have the same hopes, desires, and everything. You know, and people just don't realize that. And it's shocking.
Well, you know, it's one of those things I was thinking about earlier today because of something Carol Baker posted on Facebook, asking the question, you know, what was the ascendancy of stupid in this country? And, you know, the right-wingers, Charles, will say, our schools went to hell when we took prayer out of the schools, which is, you know, so much crap. Because nobody ever took schools prayer out of the schools. Anybody who's ever seen an unprepared ninth grader praying for a good grade on an algebra test knows that, or has been that ninth grader, and that would be me. The quadratic what? And secondly, you can look back that far, and in fact, a little bit further back. This isn't a matter of blame. It's a matter of cultural observation. With the arrival of Brown versus Board of Education and desegregation of schools, white people in this country, white racists, conservatives, conservative Southerners in particular, but my God, conservative Northerners in places like Boston and Detroit and Chicago and Denver, but white conservatives, largely racist in nature, said, well, if we're going to have to share our public school system, to hell with them. To hell with the public school system. Might as well go back to having private schools. And, you know, Charles, you know, that's what a bunch of them did. They formed their white Southern academies, you know, under the aegis of their churches.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I have a little bit more insight into prejudice because I was born with cerebral palsy. I was born with the umbilical cord wrapped around my neck, and I was born 3 months premature. And so, you know, I mean, I've been on job interviews before and people ask me, you know, well, what did you do to your leg? And I say, well, nothing. I was born with cerebral palsy. And the job interview's through right there. They won't admit why the job interview just suddenly ended, but it's ended.
See, that's where I would answer the question. It happened in a shark attack. because I had a dear friend who had some terrible scarring on her leg, and when people that was from the shark attack, and people just they move on.
Yeah,
because they don't. It's like. Because you can tell they're just itching to say, oh, tell me about the shark attack. But they're that wouldn't be very polite, would it? And so just tuck that one away, Charles. Yeah, courtesy of the horn.
Yeah, but you know, it's I've listened to your program a lot, and like I say, I used to listen to it after I'd listened to Mike Malloy and. And then you all quit streaming on, I think you're on, what is it, and now rather than White Rose.
Well, no, we're still on White Rose, and that's where I post the podcast to every night. And, and of course, the Listen Live button at headonradionetwork.com is to the White Rose stream. We're on TuneIn. We were on Stitcher, and I've written numerous notes to Stitcher going, hey, what the hell happened? And... they're not real good at replying.
Yeah.
So, no telling.
But, I don't know. I'm just kind of fed up with the way things are going now, and that's basically why I support Bernie Sanders. And I think that people that don't support Bernie Sanders, they're voting against their own best interest. And I'm just wondering how hungry people are going to have to get before they say to hell with these conservatives. We're going to do things our way.
Well, I think the only person who is running as a Democrat with a possibility to crack in to crack the facade of the South is Bernie Sanders. Of course, Hillary is leading big in South Carolina. Hopefully he can find the time to put a dent in that, and to be quite candid about it all, the key from the Democratic Party standpoint, the key to the South is going to be raising people's awareness of what Bernie stands for and who he is in the black community. For some reason or another, by virtue of Bill Clinton. Hillary has some sort of automatic in, and that's going to be hard to overcome.
What people don't realize is the black community in this country comprises roughly, I think, about 13-16% of the total population. And if people would forget about race and all that and just interact with each other, the economy would be a whole lot better, because you can't cut out 13-16% of the economy and expect this country to progress any at all. It's not really a racial issue. It's just common sense. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you would think.
And people just are not willing to do that. I mean, you know, they, for some reason, people who came from these hoity-toity families that have a lot of money in the bank and all, they think that, you know, well, I don't have to deal with these people. Well, you don't. But when you cut out 13-16% of the total population, this country's never going to advance. And, you know, you might, I firmly believe that if people would forget about it, and because in Kingsport, where I came from, the people that live across the street from me, their granddaughter married a black man, and their great granddaughter is biracial, and nobody cares.
No.
And if the whole country were to get, you know, just not care anymore, and you know, money could flow through the economy, then you know it.
Well, ultimately,
we have been in a whole lot better shape.
Ultimately, Charles, that's gonna be. I mean, that's inexorably where America is going. You know, Anthrax Coulter complains about it, calling it the Browning of America. She's disgusting. But the fact of the matter is, we are changing demographically as a nation, and that's okay. That's as it should be relative to the larger population of the planet. But you said, you know, your neighbor was raising a biracial child. Here's the wrinkle on that, though. If it was a biracial couple raising a white child, there'd be a problem. Or so I surmise. But you know, Joe Bajant, I don't know if you've ever read his books. If you haven't, they're well worth it.
Who is that again?
Joe Bajant. He is dead now. B-A-G-E-A-N-T. He wrote Deer Hunting with Jesus. And I got a feeling it would speak to you. You know, he used to talk about the fact that wander into the Cracker Barrel on any given Sunday, and you're going to see white grandma and white grandpa, and you're going to see little biracial grandchild sitting there, you know, sitting there at the Cracker Barrel Sunday breakfast table, or lunch, or whatever. And so, no, you can't really. You're exactly right. You can't go down that road without running into some contradictions. Because on a personal level, love is love.
If, you know, these people that claim to be religious, you know, they claim to read the Bible and they claim to do all, but there's nothing in the Bible about interracial marriage. It's just, it's not there.
Well, that's because the concept of race didn't exist in that Bronze Age culture.
Right.
Tribalism existed. Clan nationality existed. I mean, there were Assyrians, Babylonians, and what Egyptians and whatnot. But race, no.
And, you know, it's just, I don't know. I just believe this country's, you know, I believe we're in for harder times than what people realize.
Oh, I think, look, if any of those clowns on the clown arc on the other side get into the White House, and we've got a president, a Republican president, a Republican Congress, and a Republican Supreme Court. Cancel Christmas.
Yeah.
Because Wall Street will run amok. Wall Street learns nothing from its past mistakes, and the operative theory of the day will be that we're over-regulating Wall Street, and then boom, 2008 will look like a walk in the park.
Yeah, I'm sure what you're saying is right. I think it was Tom Hartman that wrote a book that, you know, in about another year or two, we're probably going to be facing hard times.
It's going to be something that's going to take a lot of work to avoid. And even if we were to assume for a moment that Bernie is the president of the United States, and I like to assume that. Even he has a monumental uphill climb dealing with that Congress, and that's why he was talking about starting a revolution with young voters, and I hope that he's expanding on that a little bit, because I think young people in this country, Charles, have a right to be told, listen, us older people are screwing your future, and we're not going to be here for it. And so if you want to let these angry old white people in the Republican Party ruin your future, it's on you. If you want to change it, it's on you. There's more of them, there's more of you than there are of them. Go ye unto the voting booth and get busy.
Yeah. Well, the thing that scares me, too, is I don't see much difference between Hillary Clinton and, say, Paul Ryan. I really don't.
I understand that, and I hear a lot of people say that. I think the differences are bigger than most people let on, but it's hard to get your head around that when you see her holding her hands out, holding the edges of a great big bag waiting for Wall Street to dump money in it. Now, how is somebody that takes that kind of money going to come down on Wall Street the way they need to come down on? I mean, it was straight out of the debate the other night, Charles. She said, I went to Wall Street. I was the senator for Wall Street. She said that. I went to Wall Street to these hedge fund guys, and to these bankers in 2007, and I said, now cut that out about these foreclosures.
And another thing that bothers me about Hillary Clinton is she's a Zionist, and I think people in the Middle East should have mutual respect for each other and live together in peace. I really do. I can't see it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead, please.
I mean, I don't see any difference between one person and another. I mean, I think there's a lot of false teaching out there about the Middle East, and a lot of people have brought it into their religious teachings, which is a bunch of crap. I can't see why that the, we just can't forget about this earthly Zionism and just the Arabs and the Jews just live in peace with each other. I mean,
you would hope so, but the problem is it goes back to the partition, and the issue of the right of return. There are millions of people now who consider, and it's no difference that, you know, the Jews of the diaspora considered that area to be their rightful home, even though they were thrown out of there 2,000 years ago by the Romans. And so how much more so for people for whom it is within living memory of when the entire world got together behind Zionism and threw them out of their home. And the next thing you know, you're arguing over title deeds coming from the Almighty.
But if you're, you know, the particular religion I was raised in is not a Zionist religion, and we don't even celebrate Christmas as a religious holiday. Excuse me. And because Christmas is based on Saturnalia, which is a pagan holiday.
It absolutely is.
And Easter is based on the celebration of the fertility rites of the Celtic goddess Astra, I can't remember.
Right, which probably goes back and relates to the ancient Babylonian moon goddess Ishtar.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, basically, if you look at the Bible as just a historical document, I mean, the Jews were carried into captivity many times, and basically, you know, they were eventually told by the prophets, Isaiah, that, you know, that they would be like a broken vessel. They'd just be scattered everywhere. And so, you know, I mean, they just need to live in peace with the people and forget about, you know.
Yeah, if you treat it as a real estate problem instead of a religious problem, you've got a lot better chance of solving the problem.
Yeah.
Because religious problems are often intractable. Well, I'll tell you what, Charles, it's been a real joy hearing from you. I hope this will not be your last call.
Oh, I enjoy listening to your program. You know, I'd like to have some conversations. I don't know if you can have conversations back and forth with other people. Sounds like
you're inside the Horn Malloy Skype chat group even as you speak. Gerald,
you sure can.
Yeah, Gerald and Sparky and Roger are there, and so's Rick.
Welcome, Charles.
Yeah, I was going to say I thought Easter was about a big white rabbit that crapped chocolate bunnies and colored eggs.
There you go.
Thanks, Obama.
That's great, girl.
That's the way I was growing up.
Yeah.
So just a technical question. Their audio is getting to you okay, Charles?
I'm sorry?
Their audio is getting to you okay?
Yeah, I'm on a little Samsung Galaxy Young 2 phone right now, so it's about an $80 phone.
Well, it's working like gangbusters.
Yeah, I'm on a straight talk, so it's running on AT&T towers.
Well, your audio is great, because, you know, I've had some people saying they have a hard time hearing on this line, and I've tweaked it and monkeyed with it and fooled with it till I'm about blue in the face, but it's working well for your call. So yeah, welcome into the larger conversation.
Hey Bob, I wanted to ask you something.
Yeah.
You had that picture the other night with it, they want it all, looked like a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
You got a bunch of those?
I do.
What are you going to do with them?
I'm going to tell people next week.
Okay.
They arrived courtesy of our buddy Scott in Sweden. There are a bunch of them, and there are a bunch of horn bumper stickers. And so I've got a plan cooking, and I'll share some of the details with you off air. The only thing I did, I did an experiment. I took a Sharpie, and I put dots between they and want and it and all and at the end. So they want it all.
Okay, I'm just curious. You posted the picture on Facebook, so.
And the first one is already out in traffic. Boss Man Wayne has one. The artwork is courtesy of our buddy Scott himself. He did the artwork. And it's awesome. It's a pig with a mouth full of teeth wearing a top hat with a bag with a dollar sign on it, and the pig's got a monocle. And underneath it says headonradionetwork.com 10 years.
Awesome. Thank you, Scott.
So we're hoping this will go out to a lot of folks. By the way, I've got some thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to Luda. Answering both Chris's Have a Show on Me challenge and Carol's Make Bob's Head Explode Cypher and Live on the Air challenge. We are now down to $38.47 to go to meet Chris's challenge. So thank you very kindly, Luda.
Bob, do we have time for a concert report?
I was rather hoping we would get one. I especially wanted to hear how it was that David Lee Roth negotiated a jump on a walker.
Yeah, he did okay, actually. You know, I saw them at the Bowl on, I think it was a couple of weekends ago, on Friday, two Friday nights ago. That would make it, the fourth, if I'm ciphering correctly.
Yes.
And, yeah, actually, he was pretty good. I mean, I think the main thing about David Lee Roth is that he's lost a lot of the range of his voice. He can't hit the high notes as well, and I think it's because he used to scream so darn much when he was younger.
Yeah.
Must have affected his vocal cords.
Well, he doesn't quite have the mobility at his age that Mick Jagger has at his, does he?
I don't think so. No, but actually, he made some pretty good moves, as I recall. He kind of, you know, was teaching the crowd, like, you know, how he almost kind of moonwalked, sort of, and was kind of showing the crowd how to do that and what have you. And, I mean, Eddie Van Halen is just tremendous as a guitarist. I mean, that guy is, amazing. But it was a really fun show. Lots of people were lighting up the Herba Buena or whatever. And, I had a date, and we ended up sharing some with a person in front of us, one row in front of us. So it was a very communal kind of atmosphere, a good party atmosphere. And then the very next night, I got to see the Scorpions play at the LA Forum. And that band is just so tight in terms of, the lead singer, who is it? Forget the guy's name. Is it? It'll come to me. But he sounds just like he does on the recordings. He hasn't lost any of his range. That guy's like amazing, and the lights and the sounds were just tremendous. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I saw that with my son. So it was a good, very, very, very busy weekend with the concerts and so forth. But very well worth it, I thought. You know,
it sounds like a blast.
Oh, totally, totally. I couldn't, if I spent money like that every weekend, I would soon become bankrupt, but, you know.
So who was on drums and bass for Van Halen?
I think Wolfgang is on the drums. I think it's the son. I don't know if
yeah,
it's
Wolfie.
Eddie's son.
I was wondering if it was Wolfie.
Yeah, it was Wolfie. And on bass, it was one of the Van Halen brothers, I think. Who's the other guy? Alex.
Alex, right, yeah.
Yeah, so it was Alex on the bass, it was Eddie on the lead guitar, David Lee, of course, just sings, and then Wolfie on the drums. So,
how long did they play?
They played about 2 hours, I would say. Oh, and do you know who the warm-up act was?
No.
Kenny Wayne Shepherd. He is a talented guy. I don't know how much you know about him, but he plays the guitar much like Stevie Ray Vaughan did.
Yeah.
Just a tremendous talent. And, you know, the sad thing about it is he could only play about, like, maybe five songs because, you know, he was only the warm-up act. You know, but the crowd was, you know, I think he sang Blue on Black. And he sang a number, but they played a number of other songs. But I think the crowd would have liked to have seen more of him as well. But that's what happens when he's the warm-up act. If you hog the lead act's time, you tend not to be asked back as the warm-up act, do you?
Oh, that's true. And you don't want to stay so long that people are going, get off the stage! We want to see Eddie!
Yeah.
Only exactly. Not in that accent, not down there. So this was the Hollywood Bowl?
That was the Hollywood Bowl, yeah.
Is it just an amazing acoustic experience?
Yeah, it was. I had a really good seat. I didn't sit in the orchestra, but just one section back from the orchestra, so we were still on the benches. And, yeah, but it's a good sound. They have, you know, they have nice display areas. And interestingly, even though I was only, you know, even though I had really good seats at the bowl, I was probably three times closer to the stage for the Scorpions concert, even though I was on the balcony, the second level.
By the way, they tell me in the chat room, yeah, the lead singer for the Scorpions is Klaus Meine.
Yes.
Todd says Alex plays drums and Wolfie plays bass.
Oh.
And Bob, you did that wrong.
Which part
of the stage? It was supposed to be Do Freebird.
Yeah. Freebird, man. Yeah. But speaking of music, there's going to be a pretty happening time going on at Bridge Day tomorrow.
Oh. I was going to ask if you were going to go to Bridge Day. Are you going?
Oh, I'm going. I'm going.
Yeah. But you're almost obligated because you live in the county, right?
Well, no, mostly people in the county go somewhere else.
Get the hell out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
Bob, is there a chance of a red-eye flight to West Virginia to catch Bridge Day or not from L.A.?
Oh, yeah, you could. You absolutely could.
There's never a problem getting a flight into or out of Charleston.
Yeah, let's see. Get busy now. Catch a red-eye L.A. to Atlanta, and then catch the 7 a.m. Atlanta to Charleston, and then you're an hour up the road, and you're at Bridge Day.
I'm gonna have to miss my two alma maters facing each other tomorrow, Iowa against Northwestern. If I go there, Bob.
Oh, I'd say it'd be. We got television here.
You do.
Yeah.
It starts at noon.
4G right there too, probably.
Oh yeah, we got 4G. You'd get awesome 4G in the middle of the bridge.
Huh. So what kind of bands they have on Bridge Day?
Well, so this is kind of a big deal. This is the very first Bridge Jam. And it's going to be a big bluegrass shindig.
Oh, cool.
The undisputed king of newgrass is going to be here. The one and only, the legendary, mind-blowing Sam Bush. I mean, he can make a mandolin it's like Jimi Hendrix on eight strings, eight cool. Very short, high pitched strings that are tuned like a violin, and require one to be able to make chords with one's hands that look like one has, you know, I don't know, been possessed by the devil.
It's a very uncomfortable hand position.
Lordy, lordy.
Yeah, and so Sam Bush, Jerry Douglas, and the Earls of Leicester, the Rarely Heard. A couple of locals.
I bet they'll do Freebird.
Damn, Skippy. Some local progressive bluegrass bands known as called Common House and Illusionary Field Unit. And Sam Bush says he's excited as hell to be playing it.
Awesome. How many people are expected to be in the crowd, Bob?
Well, for Bridge Day itself, there'll be 100,000 people.
Wow. So, how many of these folks are actually on the bridge? I mean, I don't want
100,000 people.
All on the bridge?
Oh yeah.
What if they all jump up at the same time?
We try not to encourage them to do that.
Okay.
there's something about being 876 feet in the air, with no building underneath you, just air between you and the river, that encourages a certain amount of, shall we say, decorum.
a river with a lot of big rocks in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like there's you hit that river, you're going to find the bottom of it pretty damn quick.
Bob, is that the famous bridge that's depicted on the West Virginia Quarter on
the very one, the very one?
Oh my gosh, what's the name of the bridge?
The New River Gorge Bridge.
Oh, okay.
And of course they used to just shut down all four lanes and everybody could go out but now they only shut down two lanes and you got to go through metal detectors and get inspected, neglected, and rejected, and be vouched for by law enforcement, because as of 2001, it suddenly occurred to us here in Fayette County, West Virginia, that there 6'6" tall Arab with the portable dialysis machine was just a itching to blow up our bridge. I'm not kidding. The paranoia just, well, I mean, but where did paranoia not run wild? I mean, this country has been convinced for 14 years now that Al-Qaeda just wants to turn your local Walmart into a heap of smoke and rubble.
There you go.
Did they put the pop-up barriers on the bridge, too?
I do not know if I know of which you speak.
Well, on Shasta Dam, they put the big old barriers that pop up out of the ground.
No. We don't know. We don't
drive on it.
No, we don't have those. At least, not that I've seen.
That's what happened at Shasta Dam, 9/11.
I mean, the bridge has been here since the mid to late 70s, and it's got its own sort of a history. And I mean, occasionally you'll have a suicidal person go out on it, and inevitably there's somebody from somewhere else who, you know, being suicidal are also apparently lacking in good sense. So they think they're far enough out on the bridge and they jump, thinking, you know, I'm going to go jump in the river, end it all. And I'm not making fun, okay? I'm not making fun. But what they end up doing, what you don't realize is that's a 1.1 mile bridge, and the time and the space of the bridge where you're actually over the river is what, Gerald? Maybe 250 feet of it.
Yeah, if that. I mean,
so when they go,
how wide is the river there?
Yeah. So when they go and they jump, instead of hitting the river, they rather quickly hit the mountain and go, you know, all the way down.
The canyon walls are very steep.
Yes, and rocky.
Rocky. Yeah, if you jump into that water if you would go to the middle of that bridge and jump into the water, you will die.
So, but I guess, for the people who are jumping with parachutes, they're trying not to hit the river, and right. You know, it's still, you know, I mean, they come down in trees, and the optimum thing is to hit the landing area, which is this little itty bitty bit of, you know, sort of gravelly sandy beach there. But no small number eventually end up in the drink.
Is bridge jumping illegal up there? Do you have a day where you can jump off the bridge in a parachute or whatever?
Yeah, this is that day.
Only on bridge day.
Yeah.
Oh, on bridge day you can. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only day that it's legal.
Hundreds of people will jump off the bridge tomorrow.
Hmm. Will any die?
It is not unknown to happen.
Yeah.
Usually. Well,
my advice for people who are thinking of jumping off the bridge is you're probably better off going to the Golden Gate, although I think they put up barricades and fences a long time ago there. But anyway.
Well, my advice to people looking to jump off the bridge tomorrow is why? They got beer right over there. You know, just have a beer, relax, enjoy Sam Bush just tearing the bejesus out of a mandolin, you know.
Wow. Is there anywhere that like broadcast online or anything like that?
ESPN used to show up. I'm sure it'll pop on some. I bet if you look on Livestream or Ustream or YouTube, it's become such a commercial event. I wouldn't be surprised if they're not streaming the whole thing right there.
Because I mean, we have people from all over the various parts of that.
All over the world. People come from
all over the world now, huh?
Wow. Yeah. Yes.
Just to jump off that bridge.
Mm. Yes. Wow.
Because it's one of the few places where you can do it legally.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's base jumping heaven, I guess, right?
After you pay the proper fees, of course.
Yeah, right. You don't get to do this for free. I mean, and it's not like you walk up to the edge of the bridge and go, you know, here we go. No, they put up a structure,
mm-hmm.
and it actually goes out over the gorge beyond the bridge rails.
Right.
Because the winds can get pretty interesting, and they can blow your base jumping ass right back into the substructure.
Ouch. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll do that for my 60th birthday, Bob.
I think you should. Let me know, and by God, I'll meet you there.
Sounds good.
Well, hey, look what just happened. We're out of time. And yep. and I say that, Steve, having jumped in from New York City, and let's see, 7, 7, 6, 4, 7, 3. This was easy, Steve. 7, 6, 3, 7. We have $27.36 to go to meet Chris's Have a Show on Me challenge and finish the week to the good, including the night that I wasn't here because I screwed everything up on Tuesday. So hopefully somebody will pick up that slack. $27.36. Thanks to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thanks, Charles, for your first-time call. Thank you, Gerald, for jumping in. Thanks, Roger, for being here. Glad you could get away from the phone there, Rick. We appreciate it. And thank you, as ever, Sparky, for your moderation of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thanks, one and all. And with that, it is time to get on out of here. Thank you to everyone who met that challenge this evening, starting with Carol Baker. Thank you to Joan. Thank you to Randy. Thank you to Luda. Thank you to Steve. It is all very, very much appreciated, and that's how this all stays on the air. Steve called it a Make Bob Crazy Ciphering Challenge response. Thank you very kindly. And thanks to all of you who spend your time sharing in this conversation in whatever way you do, whether you email, participate on Facebook, call the program, tweet, or just sit silently and wonder why I continue to do this night after night. Thank you very, very kindly. Because the gift of you sharing your precious finite time on this planet is about the greatest gift anyone has to give. It's a wonderful little community you've built here. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHEACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.